Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA show!
Back in your life on this Monday, November 11th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. How are you doing? This feels like a special day. This feels like a different kind of day, a different kind of show, if you will. I've got that warm, tingly feeling inside. I am very excited. But before we get to today's program, right up the top, I just want to say it is Veterans Day here in America, Remembrance Day in Canada, my home country. Thank you to everyone who has served this great country and my home country. We appreciate you more than you know, and we hope that you are having a great day. We thank you for your service. Now, why is it a special day? Well, I think that I've been doing this show for almost 11 years now, and I think this might be one of the most anticipated lineups we've ever had. We've got a lot to discuss with a lot of very important people, a lot of people that we have not heard from in quite some time, a lot of special people, a lot of VIPs, if you will. So let me run down today's lineup, my friends, because I am so excited. I can't believe this is my job. I can't believe I get to do this for a living. If you would have told me 20 years ago that I'd be doing shows like this after a weekend like I just had, doing sidelines and all that stuff, I would have said you were nuts. But this is it. Liver of the dream, Ariel Helwani. I am here doing a show at ESPN with a guest list like this. Let me tell you who's joining us today. At around 3:55, we're going to be joined by Caitlin Chookagian. Is she the number one contender at 125 pounds? I think she has a bone or two to pick with me. Yes, I think we're on icy terms. We'll get to that later in the program. Damian Maia is coming off a great win over Ben Askren in Singapore. How does he do it? In his 40s, almost the leader as far as UFC victories are concerned. How does he keep on doing it? Where does he go from here? We'll talk to him about that. Tyron Woodley has a few things he wants to get off his chest. Where does he fall into the welterweight picture? We'll talk to him about that at 3:15. Stipe Miocic is the reigning defending UFC heavyweight champion. We have not heard from him since his eye surgery, since Daniel Cormier laid down the gauntlet. We'll hear from him at 3. How about Nick Diaz? Nick Diaz, Nathan's older brother. Haven't talked to him in 5 years. 5 years, you'll hear from him on today's show. How about the former UFC strawweight champion, Rose Namajunas? We haven't heard from her since May, since she lost the belt. Fell on her head, hinted at retirement. You'll hear from her today. And how about Francis Ngannou? Perhaps top contender at heavyweight. He's got a few things to get off his chest as well. But what a week I had. Tuesday, I'm there with my wife in our kitchen, and my phone blows up. Because I get a tweet reply from the most electrifying man in sports and entertainment, the Brahma Bull, The Rock. I wrote about his announcement prior to 244, documentary about Mark Kerr, the smashing machine, in my opinion, the greatest MMA documentary of all time. He made that announcement. He'll be starring and producing in the Mark Kerr biopic. And he writes me back, appreciate you, Ariel. The doc is special, and you see it right over there. Wow, The Rock wrote me back. This is incredible. What an honor. And so then I reply and I say that I think it is the greatest MMA doc. And then in that moment, I said, you know what? I have been bothering The Rock's agent, Brad Slater, for years to have this man on the show. And I kept hitting a brick wall. And so I shot my shot and I said, will you come on the show? And not only did he say yes, he picked the day. He picked Monday. And today is Monday, and a lot of you, I think, thought he wouldn't show up. A lot of you, I think, thought he wouldn't be a man of his word. But my friends, I'm here to say that not only is he a man of his word, he is here, top of the show. The inimitable, the incomparable, the one and only, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, on my program. How are you, sir?
Wow, you know, I am so good. Thank you, Ariel, for having me. What an introduction. Thank you very, very much. And I got to tell you, you know, I appreciate you taking a moment to take your shot, and I loved it. And I was like, you know what? You took your shot and I reward you, brother. Let's get on the show and let's talk.
Thank you so much. This means the world to me. And it's true. I have been bothering Brad for years and he said he would try. I don't know if he actually did, but he said he would try. And honestly, the first thing I asked him was when I got the tweet, was like, was that really him? Did he really write that? Or was it like a handler? And he confirmed that was really you. That's all you, right?
No, man, it's all me. Look, you know, with social media, I think, you know, social media is truly one of my, if not my most valuable asset, because it just allows me to really directly connect with audiences, consumers, fans. So, you know, and by the way, so in Brad's defense, he has been talking to me for years, by the way. Ariel would love to have you on a show. So it was always, well, let's figure out whatever the right opportunity is, and then we can do it. And just by nature of insane schedules, press tours and schedules and things like that, I just never had an opportunity not only to not do your show, but, you know, podcasts as well. And I haven't done radio show podcasts or anything like this in years. So you are the first one. But I got to tell you again, you know, it's like that old saying, you don't ask, you don't get. And I appreciate you taking that moment to ask me. And I thought, you know what? I love that opportunity. Yes.
That is amazing. Thank you so much. What an honor. And of course, the timing is great. You were just at MSG, UFC 244, BMF title. You put it around the waist of Jorge Masvidal after the fight. Just off the top, I'm curious, the experience, what was it like? And I couldn't help but wonder, as you were walking out, Dwayne, when you were walking out there, I remember 1996 when you made your debut at MSG. And here you are. You've made that walk a million times. But now it's in a different capacity for an MMA fight, a massive fight of this magnitude. Did that bring you back to those days, those early days at the Mecca?
You know, the Mecca, Madison Square Garden, is a very, very special place for me. I started my career, as you said, in 1996 Survivor Series at Madison Square Garden. It was my very first wrestling match in the WWE. That was my very first match in the WWE. And generally, as a lot of you guys know and your fans know, you know, wrestlers will have their very first match in the WWE in, you know, maybe a house show, a live event or something like that. I got thrown right into the fire. And so again, so Madison Square Garden is a very special place for me. They embraced me that night. I was just a punk kid rookie, who had so much to learn and so much to earn. And that New York City crowd embraced me. So to be able to go back to Madison Square Garden in that capacity, was very special for me. And, you know, this whole thing, this idea about the BMF title and what it meant, I always felt like it was something that transcended sports, it transcended weight division, because it had this incredible street credibility to it. And for me, just to be a part of it and to walk back, I'll tell you what happened. When I was walking to the Octagon backstage, and as you know, the cameras like to follow the fighters and their teams as they go out. And we had that really cool entrance, which I was so appreciative of. But when I was walking backstage in the garden, walking out to the Octagon, I was so precisely in the moment. And I had this rush of thought of how I've walked that backstage in those hallowed halls of Madison Square Garden so many times, held up over my head so many WWE heavyweight titles. I had the honor in front, you know, wrestling in front of that Madison Square Garden crowd. But that night was very unique and different, because when I got to the Octagon, I realized that, you know, the same flushes of thought that I went through as a wrestler, which was making sure that my timing was right in the ring, the cadence was right, making sure that all the highlights and the high spots of a match, especially if we had to go 30 minutes, 45 minutes, sometimes an Ironman match, all that was going through my head. And, you know, what I realized is, you know, I had such a profound, even greater profound level of respect for the fighters who not only walked those hallowed halls of Madison Square Garden, the UFC fighters, but MMA fighters who walked that walk before every fight. And this idea that, you know, I had the luxury of knowing what the outcome will be in pro wrestling, and again, it doesn't take away from the physicality of it, and you're still getting suplexed and thrown around by 300-pound men and all these injuries that you have to deal with. But, you know, this idea that, you know, the fighters just, they don't have that luxury. This is why, you know, fighting is such a finite amount of time for these fighters. And anyway, I had a real moment and being so present in that. And that night was a very special night, and to be able to present that title to whoever the winner was, and to be part of that, promoting the fight, because I did go into that fight in the BMF fight with, you know, my number one job was to promote the fight and get as many eyes as possible on this fight. And I think because fighters have a finite window of time, and the same thing in pro wrestling, you know, I always want to make sure that the fighters and the wrestlers are getting as much money as they possibly can, because that's the bottom line. Of course, there's passion. There's passion, there's drive, there's all the, there's disciplines. But at the end of the day, I want them to secure the bag. So, you know, the promotion that I was doing leading up to the fight, I wanted to make sure that Jorge and Nate Diaz and all the fighters, by the way, were making as much money as they possibly could on that night. And if I can help raise the bottom line and impact the bottom line in a little way, then, you know, I've done my job.
How did you feel about the stoppage?
Well, I mean, I think like the fighters and a lot of fans, you know, I wanted the fight to continue. I was surprised by the stoppage. But I was also, you know, very careful not to say that I disagreed with it, because I'm not a doctor and I'm not in there and I don't see what the doctor saw, you know, in Nate's eyes and how deep the cuts were and how closely connected they could have become. You know, I'm not quite too sure, but I would have loved to see the fight continue because, and also I feel confident knowing that and feel confident saying that because I know that Jorge and especially Nate, you know, considering just his mentality, would have loved to see the fight to continue to.
Did you happen to hear Nate's comments after the fight, alluding to the fact that he thought that you were rooting for Jorge? He said he loves ballers, but, you know, he kind of threw down the gauntlet as well. I'm wondering what you thought of his comments.
He did. You know, I wasn't surprised at Nate's comments because that's the Nate that we all know and love. You know, he is as advertised. And, you know, Nate, he gets it. You know, he knows that me and, you know, Jorge, we're boys. We're from Miami. We have a lot of deep connections down there. A lot of the fighters we know, you know, a lot of the coaches and trainers that we know, a lot of the gyms that we've been to down there. So, you know, there's a connection. So, no, I was totally fine with it. He gets it. You know, and I guess, you know, again, I went into the fight. I wanted to be as neutral as possible when I was promoting it because as we're leading up to it and selling it on pay-per-view, you know, I didn't want to come out and say, Jorge's my boy and he's going to win. No, I just wanted to be neutral. And I thought that was the best, smartest, strategic play, you know, to get as many new eyes on this fight as possible. And again, you know, help impact in my own little way, the bottom line. And from what I'm told, you know, it was ESPN's biggest fight since UFC's transition to ESPN. It was the biggest fight they've ever had. Second, I'm sorry, to Conor and Khabib, which is quite an amazing accomplishment. I'm very proud for both those guys.
And, you know, we had Jorge on the show last week, and he obviously was thrilled that you were there. He said that you're his favorite movie star, and it was such an honor to have a Miami guy there. He told us that you guys shared a moment backstage and that you even gave him some advice about, like, this newfound fame. Are you comfortable sharing what you said to him?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. You know, I congratulated him, of course. And, you know, I talked to him about, you know, what this opportunity meant and how, you know, this BMF title that is somewhat polarizing in the sport of MMA. Some guys were behind it and some fans were behind it and some guys weren't, and some fans weren't. But it was also, again, this is this unique experience that, you know, kind of transcends, again, weight divisions and the sport because it has such street cred. You know, there's incredible champions who are incredibly disciplined and multiple disciplines in MMA. And then there's the BMFs. So I was very happy for Jorge. And also, you know, there was something I think, you know, with Jorge, it's just, you know, life is funny sometimes, and the world of MMA, which is why, as I said in the press conferences, there's no other sport like it because, you know, everyone's got a punch and shot. And within a quarter, 3 month cycle, all of a sudden, there's a new star that just happens to all of a sudden start shining. And Jorge has been in the game a very, very long time. I'm from Miami, you know, and his lore and legend of being a street fighter in Miami is very, very real from back in the day. So, you know, I told him, I reminded him that, you know, what an incredible opportunity this is, and to take advantage of it, continue to work hard, as of course he's going to do. And also, you know, he's got a sharp wit about him, I think, which makes him very likable. You know, he loves to talk shit, as we all do down in Miami, especially because it's what we do. But he also has a cool, sharp, smart wit about him. And he's got his head in the right place. And that head, in his head being in the right place, is wanting to do everything he can to impact his own bottom line and impact the company's bottom line, which will in turn generate more income for himself and for the company and for the fighters. So he's really making sure that his value is realized. And I also told him, you know, this with this new with this, the turning of the corner, if you will, that he is, and I'm sure he's going to be Fighter of the Year in 2019. And, you know, he has an opportunity now to not only be one of the greatest of all times, but, you know, you could kind of see this trajectory happening with Jorge Masvidal, where, you know, he could become a very big, obviously, main event player in the game. But I also just reminded him that he also has this really cool, calm humility to him, which I think is very unique. And you know, because a lot of fighters have that, by the way, and a lot of fighters try and find this balance of self-promoting themselves as well they should, but also have this a little bit of humility, because really that's the basis and the grounds and the foundation of MMA and mixed martial arts, is having that discipline and having a little bit of humility. And, you know, he said that with a smile. He said, man, I always got that. And, you know, he said, look, I'm going to need you now at every fight. You're my good luck charm. I'm going to have to find you. I said, well, you're not going to have to look hard, man. I got your back.
And of course, on Friday, you made that announcement that you'll be producing and starring in the Mark Kerr film, The Smashing Machine. Again, my favorite MMA doc of all time. And I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, I understand the search to find Mark Kerr and to get him to agree to give up his life rights and to get you on board to do this was quite the story in its own right. How did you actually find him? Because I haven't seen him in years.
Well, it took some digging to find him, and I tasked my agent, who is our friend, your friend too, Brad Slater, to find him. I called my agent probably about 4 o'clock in the morning after I rewatched the documentary, and I said, we have to track these rights down, track down Mark Kerr. First of all, see how the guy is doing. How's his health? How's he feeling? How's his relationship with his kids? I mean, you know, again, we haven't, like you, I haven't seen the guy in years and years and years and years. And so Brad Slater went on a rampage of finding him and connecting all the dots. And, you know, when we found some success of tracking Mark down, he was able to have a conversation with him and said, here's, you know, Dwayne's idea and thoughts and plans. How do you feel about that? And Ariel, I got to tell you, you know, 9 times out of 10, when I or my team present something like this to an individual, whether it's trying to track down their life rights or as it relates to a project or a movie or whatever it is, 9 times out of 10, if it's someone who hasn't been in the game for a long time or they haven't been on the radar in a long time, they are so gung-ho and they are so ready and they're asking, what do you need from me and how much am I going to get paid? And, you know, when is that check coming and what's happening? And I was really moved, though not surprised, that Mark was so calm in his conversations and said, this is amazing. And I'll, of course, I'm open to whatever you guys want to do. And, you know, Brad had said, how do you feel about Dwayne becoming you and playing you in this film? He said, Dwayne can play me right now. He said something that I thought was really incredible. He said, Dwayne understands who I am and he knows who I am. And Brad had said, oh, what do you mean? Did you guys meet before? And he goes, yeah, we did meet before. And we had lunch before years ago, just as two guys who admired each other's work. This is back in the late 90s when I was reaching the pinnacle of WWE at that time. And he, of course, was, you know, one of the baddest men on the planet. He said, no, he said, Dwayne understands what it's like to perform in front of 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people. And he also knows what it's like and how intoxicating that is. And he also knows how intoxicating and how damaging it can be when you no longer have that. And then you search for another outlet and what that means and the pressures of succeeding and the mental health challenges that we go through, fighters, pro wrestlers, people in general, the pressures to succeed. And some people deal with that well, and some don't necessarily deal with it that well. And then, of course, the addiction part of it that he had as well. So, you know, there are really so many, you know, based on the documentary alone makes a tremendous story. Now, Mark's life after the documentary is really what the gold is and really what the power and the anchor is of this whole thing, because here's a guy who, as you know, and as a lot of MMA fans know, and also too, it's like I told you, Ariel, you know, this is an opportunity for us to educate a lot of the new generation of MMA fans on who Mark Kerr is and this founding father of MMA, the specimen, the smashing machine. Because when I made the announcement there on that Friday at the press conference, you know, I built it up so much and that crowd was on fire. And I remember saying, you know, and I'm going very proud. I'm going to make a movie. I'm going to produce and star in our $7 Productions, Mark Kerr, the Smashing Machine. And you could tell the hardcore fans knew exactly who he was just like that. And they started clapping. And then there was a good amount of this new generation of fans who were like, who? They got on their phone. They're like, oh, yeah, he's a badass. So it's a great opportunity for us to educate, you know, and bring to light, shine the light on somebody who's very deserving. But the bottom line point of this is Mark Kerr's story after that documentary all these years is about a man who reached the highest heights of success and came down crashing incredibly hard. But like a lot of us who kind of go through this, everybody goes through this some way or another in their own way. You know, every day he just gets up wanting to be a little bit better today than he was yesterday. And the guy's trying, man. He's trying to be a good father, trying to be a good man, and trying to leave a good legacy. So I'm so happy to tell this story about Mark Kerr. And those are the kind of stories that I like enjoy telling, because also too is, and you know this because you're a fan and you're in underneath MMA, and you know all these fighters. Sometimes when you look a little bit deeper than their physicality, their physical attributes, and yes, they're badasses and they're BMFs and they're champions. Sometimes when you look a little deeper, there's great humanity to a lot of these fighters who have this tremendous amount of insane pressure to perform and put it all on the line where their life is literally at risk, you know, every fight. So I'm very happy to tell Mark Kerr's story.
Like you, Dwayne, I pride myself on being a man of my word. We have sort of reached the end of the agreed upon time. Do you have a couple more minutes? Can I ask you a couple more questions, or do you have to run?
Look at you shooting your shot. Let's do it right now.
All right. I hope no one hates me afterwards, but hey, you know, you only live once.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Hey, Steven Spielberg, don't worry. I'm going to be there in a second. Oh, Ariel just needs 5 more minutes. Go.
Okay.
That's all right. Don't worry about him.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Two quick ones. A, when do you know – do you know when the movie is coming out? And B, the Anthony Robles – a film as well. Will you be playing Anthony as well?
I will not be playing Anthony. No. Okay. Like, so right now my, I'm going to speak to Anthony. He was trying to break a world record yesterday. You know, I'm not quite too sure if he broke it. I just got to find out, of doing, the world record of pull-ups. I think in a short amount of time. Anyway, the Anthony Robles story, for those who don't know, he is an incredibly accomplished, you know this, Ariel, he's an incredibly accomplished NCAA national champion in wrestling. And he went on to defy odds with one leg. And, you know, when he was 3 years old, they got him a prosthetic and he refused to put it on. And he never had one since. And here's a guy you talk about overcoming odds. You know, he really epitomizes somebody who can overcome odds and really excel. And not only that, but, you know, when life kind of deals you these cards that you don't ask for, and that maybe you wish you had another, you know, hand of cards, but you still play them with the best of your ability. This guy, not only has Anthony gone on to succeed and obviously become, you know, this incredible, inspiring story, but also what an incredible personality and a warm heart and a warm soul. And he has real mana that shines through. So I'm excited to tell that story. And we're, you know, we just made the announcement the other day. So I'm very excited about that. And as far as for the Mark Kerr story, so right now the whole goal was just to lock down the rights, for his life. And I had a great conversation with Mark, right before the press conference, in New York City for 244. And now it's in the development phase and we'll find the right writers. There's a lot of, as you can imagine, there were a lot of great writers who are Oscar winners, by the way, who are raising their hand to take a crack at this, and we'll find the right directors. And ideally the goal is to be in production on the Mark Kerr story in 2021. That will be the goal.
All right. Let's end on this if we can, because this is something I'm so fascinated by. You are such an inspiration. You don't need me to tell you that. You are so positive.
Thank you,
man.
The way
you hold yourself, the way people look up to you, the way you've conducted yourself. I mean, never in a scandal or anything like that. It's just amazing what you have become. For those who have watched you from the Rocky Maivia days, it's truly amazing. And it also feels like you're
so
one of
much.
Us, right? It feels like you made it. And I think that's why so many people are so happy for you. Cut from the practice squad of the Stampeders. I mean, it's just mind blowing. Your story is incredible. But I'm wondering, Do you ever get anxious? Do you ever feel off? You're always so on. You're always so positive. You're always so down to earth. But anxiety and feeling nervous and feeling like maybe you're not going to perform or, you know, you're not up for it, things like that. These are things that I wonder about when we talk about with fighters as well. They sometimes feel like the walls are caving in. Do you ever feel that as well? Because you do come across as superhuman. I obviously know you cry and bleed like all of us, but do you ever have those moments where you feel like you need to talk to yourself and get over that hump?
I mean, yeah, you know, thank you for asking that question. You know, I think that, you know, when you're in a position like mine and, you know, the optics of my life is always so forward facing and it can be at times noisy and loud just by virtue of, my job and what I do. And you know, a lot of people, or everyone for that matter, they see the upside to it. And again, the optics of fame and the optics of fortune. And I'm not complaining because I always say the alternative to that is to go back to the days where nobody knew who I was. Go back to the days where, as you said, I played up in the CFL for the Calgary Stampeders, for just a few months before I was cut. And when I was cut from there, Wally Bono, by the way, who has just been tremendous. He is an iconic figure in the CFL. He was just a wonderful, advocate for me at that time and gave me great advice when he cut me, about hang in there. And at that time I had $7 to my name, which of course has now, you know, become a very meaningful number to me, $7. But, yeah, you know, I always say that what helps me with the pressure, because there is pressure, there's anxiety, there's all these things that we go through, there's mental health, there's challenges. You know, I always try and remind myself of a few things I always try and keep in the forefront of my mind. Number one is, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. When I feel walls closing in a little bit, or when I feel anxiety, or I feel like, you know, maybe I failed at something, by the way, and I've gone through a divorce and I've gone through a multitude of things over the years that have caused, you know, bouts with depression. But I try, and it's much easier said than done, that everything's going to be okay. Number one, number two, you're not alone. And number three, also, I try to keep in mind that, you know, I try and keep the hard times in the forefront of my mind. And when I'm able to keep the hard times in the forefront of my mind, then kind of the things that I think, and this happens to all of us, where, you know, we can be fixated on something and feel like, oh man, this is the worst thing ever, or it's not good, or I'm not quite too sure. It's like when you keep the hard times in the front of your mind, especially the shit that you have already gone through, well, it kind of eases that a little bit. And also, you know, I grew up an only child. And so I had, and I still do in ways, which is incredibly unhealthy, which is why I need therapy, to bottle things up all the time and keep it internal and try and figure the shit out on my own. Now, it's served me incredibly well over the years. However, when anxiety creeps up or any kind of insecurity creeps up, you know, I always make sure that I'm talking to somebody or reaching out to my friends, or family members. So I try to do things like that. But yeah, of course, you know, it happens to me. It happens to all of us. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, how you deal with it and the kind of perspective that you could have. I will tell you this. I will tell you that in my 20s, where I was just flying by the seat of my pants and just, you know, running headfirst into walls, I'm going to make it. And then I didn't make it, and then I made it a little bit more. You know, as you get a little older, you hopefully get a little wiser, and you really start to, I think for me, really take advantage of the moments that I'm in and try and really be present in these moments. And I think when I'm present in these moments, like for example, in the UFC 244 in that moment, or if I have a film coming out or whatever it is with my babies, with my kids, with my wife, with friends, when I'm really present.
I think you're getting another call there. All right. That was a great moment right there. We connect with them real quick. This is incredibly moving stuff and amazing to hear someone of his stature. Okay, Dwayne, are you there?
I am. And sorry, like I was saying, and that's why I became an alcoholic.
Perfect. Well, I don't say this lightly. The world is a better place because Dwayne Johnson is in it. It really is amazing to see the man that you have become and the inspiration that you've become. And so many people look up to you. And I just can't say this enough. It is an absolute honor to have you on this show. I have kept you for way too long, so I will let you go. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for being a man of your word. Thank you for replying to my tweet. You didn't have to. And for picking today, you didn't have to. You could have just said, my people will call your people, and you would have been out of this mess. But I really thank you so very deeply for this, and continued success. Can't wait for the film. Keep us posted on its development, and good luck with shooting and everything that you're doing, to you and your family, to your father, the legend, Rocky Johnson. Just congratulations, man, on everything that you've become and done. It's an inspiration. It's amazing to watch.
Man, well, Ariel, listen, thank you so much for that send off. I appreciate it. You know, look, I always say that I'm a lucky son of a bitch to have the life that I have. And the alternative, is, you know, I go back to my days when I had $7. So, you know, this is why these days it's easy to have a smile on my face and to work hard, man. So thank you for having me on. And also, I want to take the opportunity to thank the MMA community, who have not only embraced me kind of over the years, which has been great, but especially considering, you know, showcasing and highlighting one of their own and Mark Kerr, and that reception at the Garden was just incredible, and I will never forget it. And I hope to make MMA, the community and the culture of MMA, very proud with this story. And I know that everybody wants to know if I have ambitions to get in the octagon. And again, the truth is, look, I know you're going to have Stipe on.
Yes.
I'm going to take him. I can take Stipe.
Oh.
I can take Stipe to lunch, because that is about. We would go. But man, thank you so much for being so kind with your words. I really appreciate it. You keep up the great work too, as well. And as always, hardest workers in the room.
Thank you. Thank you, Dwayne. All the best to you and your team. We really appreciate it. There he is. The one and only Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, as you can expect. He gets a lot of phone calls. He's a very busy man, but he gave us way more time than we agreed to, and I can't thank him and his team enough for making that happen. That was amazing. All right, so let's go from a former WWE heavyweight champion to a potential future UFC heavyweight champion, Le Predateur, the great Francis Ngannou, kind enough to join us right now via the magic of Skype. Francis, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ariel. How are you?
It's great to talk to you, my friend. Wow, to go from The Rock to you, it seems very fitting. You're our version of The Rock, so it's great to have you on the show now, Francis. There's a lot that we have to talk about. It seems like, you know, you're on the cusp of, you know, doing big things, getting a big fight, but for whatever reason, you're not getting that fight. You're not getting that big, you know, opportunity to take you to the next step, to get back in the title picture. And so I'm just wondering, what is up with you right now? Where do you stand in your career?
You know, like right now, I don't know exactly what is my situation in my career, because I haven't heard nothing from the UFC yet, and which is very surprising since my last fight was 4 months and a half ago. So I hopefully this week we're going to have some news, but I'm just around waiting, trying to, you know.
Are you frustrated?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's very frustrating. Like right now, I don't even know how to express my feeling, because it's been a little while that I've been going back and forth through this. And it's not easy, you know. It's not easy. Basically, when there's no, like, they are not keeping you updated, and you kind of like guess everything, like figure out. First, I was about a title shot, like, okay, let's give me the title shot. I deserve the title shot. Nobody says nothing. And then the end of like talking about the trilogy between Stipe and DC, which probably going to be next year in March, which is like 9 months from my last fight. So I won't stay there expecting if somebody wins the fight and be injury free to give me like 3 months after. We're going to be maybe July or something. So I'm like, okay, I started to just fight, like just give me some fight. Even that, you know, it's not easy. It's not like easy right now. Hopefully with what's happened this weekend, I might have some fight. I guess so.
Okay. And so were you ready and willing to fight in Russia against Alexander Volkov. I saw the tweet, but it never really came to fruition. What happened there when JDS pulled out of that fight?
They called my manager like on Monday and say, yes, we have fight for Francis in Russia, in Moscow. And he said, no, like it's 3 weeks, 18 days, you know. So, like, but let me talk to Francis. Then he came talk to me, and then I'm like, yes, but it's very short. But what's the deal? We didn't hear nothing after that. We just stayed there. But to be honest, I wasn't really excited about that fight because I've been there for like more than 1 month waiting for the fight, and they just come to give me some fight, like the short notice. I don't have much to gain in that fight regarding my position. You know, I'm in the number two contender, so I don't have to take a short notice like that, 18 days short notice, with no interest.
And so when you saw Stipe beat Daniel Francis, did you think that was almost like the worst case scenario for you? Because then they would do the trilogy fight. It might drag on. It would leave you in limbo. What were you thinking at the time of that fight?
You know, at the time that I watched that fight, I didn't think about the trilogy at all. I mean, I didn't think like if they're going to do the trilogy like right away, you know. I thought maybe if they want to do the trilogy, it's going to be after one fight, because there is a contenders here, there, and they don't just hold title fight for two people, you know. So that was my expectation. I thought I'm going to fight Stipe, and I was very happy about that. Like, okay, I'm going to fight Stipe. Then maybe in the near future, they're going to do the trilogy, if ever they're going to do it. But I thought wrong. Actually,
I saw an interview recently where Dana White said that they have big plans for you and they involve fighting in France, and that you would probably headline that card. Have they talked to you about those plans? Because as of right now, we know that things are going well in France, but we don't know a month. We don't know any sort of time frame for an event. So are they keeping you on the sidelines until that event so that you can headline the event? And is this something that you're on board with? Is this something that you want?
No, they keep me on the side. I don't know nothing about what's going to be in France. I don't know when it's going to be. I mean, I just want some fight. I would really like to headline a card in France, but when? It's been 4 months and a half that I've been, since my last fight. Then I really want to get in there, you know, to stay active. When going to be the event in France? They don't even yet have a date. Yes, I mean, it's good, big plan, but also at the meantime, I have to stay active. I won't stay here for 1 year waiting for a big plan.
Okay, so do you even know when that event might be?
Do I even know what?
Do you even know when that event in France might be?
No, I don't have no idea.
Okay, so
idea at all.
In a perfect world, when would you fight next and who would you fight next? If it was up to you, if they say to you, Francis, what do you want? What's the answer?
I want Stipe.
Next.
Next. I want Stipe next.
Do you think that will happen?
I don't think so. But as you said, in the perfect world.
Right.
I mean, if things make sense, I'll say Stipe. But since I can't have, it seems like I'm not going to have Stipe, then I just want to fight. I just want to stay active. Yes. So,
now,
I don't know.
Did you happen to see this footage of the lineal heavyweight boxing champion, Tyson Fury, training with Darren Till, MMA, this weekend? Did you see this footage? And if so, what did you make of it? Is this of interest? Because I think we've talked a little bit about him in the past, but as far as boxing is concerned, do you think he's actually being serious about this?
Well, I think so. I think the guy is taking himself serious. I think it's at some point that, you know, he gained everything that he wanted in the boxing, and then he just want to enjoy life, go through different experience, like wrestling, MMA, and yes, I think he's serious.
Okay. What did you think of his footage? Did you see that clip? What do you think of his skills?
I posted. I mean, he's good. He's good with his elbow. But obviously he's a great boxer. So even the way he moves in there is perfect. I mean, there's nothing to say about it.
Fighting him in boxing or MMA, what is more interesting to you?
Both. You want to fight me in... Yeah, I mean, I want to return the favor in the ring, because I would like to fight him in the ring either way. You know, even if he comes to the boxing, to MMA or not, I would like to fight him sometime in the future.
Unlike Mayweather-McGregor, maybe in this particular regard, we do Francis Tyson MMA and then immediate rematch boxing, or vice versa, boxing then MMA. You know what I mean? As opposed to just a one-off.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, at some point I'm going to do boxing. That's clear in my mind now. I'm going to do boxing.
That's 100%?
Yeah, 100% sure.
Really? Soon?
Yeah, I haven't... Sooner or later, I don't know yet, but, you know, it's always been my dream, and I feel like I need to fulfill this dream.
Okay. Have you talked to the UFC about this dream? Do you think they would let you do this while under contract with them, or you would have to be a free agent? You'd have to be fighting elsewhere.
We haven't talked about that. I haven't, you know, the idea just, I just had the feeling recently and like really want to, you know, it's like something that I need to accomplish.
You know, every time that you've been on the show over the past year or so, I've asked you about your relationship with Dana White, and you've said you haven't talked. Is there any part of you that feels like you're not getting opportunities because your relationship may not be the best right now?
I don't know. I mean, at the meantime, like sometimes I want to be like realistic and think about what would be the best case scenario. Okay, if they are doing the trilogy, what can I have best? And, you know, there's no more option. There's no more. But I don't know. I just want to fight. That's all. And I think this week, my manager and I, Michael, we're going to try to talk to Dana and see what's happening.
Oh, really? You're going to go to Vegas?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in Vegas. Michael is going to come here in Vegas, and we're going to walk through Dana White's office.
Okay.
And try to talk to him and break him down, because I don't know.
If the heavyweight title fight isn't available next, because they're going to try to do Stipe versus DC, and we're going to get an update from Stipe later in the show, is there anyone out there that interests you, a number one contender fight? Anyone that really sticks out?
Yeah. Right now, I just want to fight. Volkov just won last week. He turned down fight against me twice. We can still make it happen. Derek Lewis won last week, the week before. Maybe they can do the rematch. Whatever it takes to make me fight.
By the way, I wanted to ask you also about Cyril Gane, who trains at an MMA factory as well. You know, a lot is said about like him being a protege of yours, and that, you know, he's sort of like the student. But are you guys close? Did you spend a lot of time training with him?
Not much. You know, he came to the gym. I wasn't there anymore. It was after that I moved down here in Vegas. And I went back. We trained a few times. And that's when I knew him. I met him. And he's a very good guy, you know, like very good fighter, good speed. I was very impressed the first time, because I used to dominate a sparring partner with my speed and everything. And it was like the first time that I have to handle some. I was just coming back to the vacation, and I was having a hard time to deal with his speed, you know, and he moved. He's very smart. Yes. Obviously he's going to be a great fighter in the roster. He's a good prospect right now.
Recently, I saw you doing a little training session with Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet. What was that like? And what kind of advice? I saw a little clip, but what kind of advice did he give you?
You know, I mean, I think just being there with Mike Tyson was more than everything. Mike Tyson always been my motto. I always look up to Mike Tyson like the best heavyweight ever. And now I'm like, you know, I would like to be like him, like to hit like him, to have the technique that he has, and finally get to meet him. And he gave me some tips, some techniques, something to do. I keep that in secret. I'm going to use it when I fight against Tyson Fury.
And, you know, it's funny because you talk about the options, you know, Tyson Fury thing, wanting to fight for the belt, things like that. There's one option that I've thrown out there a few times that I think could have some legs if maybe you get behind. It seems to me like John Jones is very anxious for a big fight. He wants a big fight and wants to test the waters at heavyweight. And I've thrown out the idea multiple times. Why not Francis Ngannou versus John Jones? Sort of like when Anderson Silva moved up and fought Forrest Griffin. It wasn't a title fight off the bat, but it was against a top contender, a man that everyone respected. What do you think of this idea, Francis Ngannou versus John Jones at heavyweight?
Personally, I think it's going to be great, but John Jones has to move in the heavyweight. I'm not going down to the light heavyweight, and so it's all up to him. That's why I'm not. It's very hard for me to handle that conversation. Because I'm not going down to the light heavyweight, but obviously, if he's move up to the heavyweight, yes, that would be great. I would do that. Recently, they were talking about he was Anthony Johnson. Yes, I would take that fight, man. That's a big fight. That's it. I think it's the best option right now, besides the title fight. But what can I do? You know, it's not up to me. And we are not in the same weight class. We are not in the same division. So unless he move up to the heavyweight, yes, then we will do it.
Yeah, Anthony Johnson, I think, is another one that fans would get excited about because it's been such a great year for you and you've looked so good and you've come back from a frustrating last year, but your fights have been so quick. So I'm sure there's a part of you that just wants to get back in there, right? Like you're itching to just fight again, correct? Because your fights have been so fast.
Yeah. I mean, like this year, my combined time in the octagon was what, 91 or 96 seconds? That's my combined time in the octagon in 2019. So I should be fighting maybe 4 times this year. I'm struggling to fight even 3 times, and it seems to not be possible.
Are you confident that beginning of next year you will fight again?
I don't know. They have to tell me. I don't have no idea. Okay. As I said before, they just keep me in the side. And I don't have no promise. I don't have nothing going on right now. And that's why we're going to try and go see Dana White this week.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Francis. We wish you the best. Hopefully you get a fight sooner rather than later. And we can see you back in there and competing again and reasserting yourself as a top contender. Thank you for doing this, Francis. Good luck and keep us posted.
Thank you, Ariel. Always a pleasure.
All right, there he is, Le Predateur, Francis Ngannou. What a scene it would be if they do, in fact, hold an event in France and have him fighting there, top of the card. He has become one of the top stars in Europe and certainly all over the world and now doing so well after a big 2019 campaign. It would make a lot of sense, but of course he wants to fight regardless, whenever, wherever. All right, now let's move along to our next guest. I have been trying to talk to this individual for quite some time, since May, to be exact. Understandably, she has been out of the limelight, but here we are around 6 or so months later, and she is back speaking to us. So it's very exciting to say hello to the former UFC strawweight champion, one of the most beloved figures in mixed martial arts, the great Thug Rose Namajunas. Rose, how are you?
I'm good. I'm done being all exclusive now, so
yes.
You can talk to me.
Oh man, it is so great
no,
to see
kidding.
You. I have been bothering Pat, your fiance, your manager Brian. I've been bothering them for months, so at least for their sake, I don't have to bother them for at least a week or two after this. It's so great to see you.
Right?
It's great to see you smiling. Why have you been out of the limelight for so long?
Oh, I just had a lot to do, you know. As you can see here, I'm finally sitting in my I changed my garage into a gym, and I've been trying to do that for the longest time. So it's like, you know, that's just one of the things, coming off of the last fight. I realized it's just, you know, not only taking responsibility for things, but also like, you know, putting action into my words rather than just like, yeah, I'm gonna do this. And just never getting it done. So that's like kind of one of the things is I just been like, yeah, not just like antisocial, but just like super busy. I also hadn't seen my grandmother's in like 6 years. So I finally flew home to Lithuania to see them. I mean, well, I guess I wasn't born there, but you know, to me, that's like my, like home aside from America. So it was cool to see them. And, just like other things like that, like just knocking off checklists, of things to do.
And I think it's understandable when someone loses a fight like that, loses their belt, that they take some time off. I don't think that's really the thing that people were worried about or the reason why they were clamoring to hear from you. I think it's because of some of the things that you said after the fight, saying maybe you wanted to take a break and maybe you wouldn't fight again. And so people are wondering, is Rose ever going to fight again? Is she really done? Was that the last time we saw her? And so here we are 6 months later. Have you made a decision whether or not you will continue to fight?
Yeah, I'll fight again. And you know, it's kind of one of those things where, oh, you get a little emotional, but, yeah, it's just like, I lost the passion for, you know, martial arts and fighting, mainly for fighting, but, I found my passion again. I went back to, Minnesota to see one of my, like, first, one of my former like coaches, like from earlier on in my amateur career, Greg Nelson. And, you know, he's just like a huge inspiration, for me. And, sorry, I'm just getting all teared up right now, but yeah, it's been tough. Like, I think the reason I wanted to retire is because this isn't a job where you can go in half-assed and not be fully passionate about what you're doing. 'Cause you know, there's been times where I've been not like totally confident in myself going into a fight. And then I just, you know, pull it off or get through it or just push through it. And then like, you know, with injuries or being sick. But this last time was like extra scary because, of what could have happened, you know, to me when, you know, just pushing through something when you're not 100%. So, I think that's why I thought that, because I wasn't sure if I really like was 100% into it. Like, of course, like fighting is all I know. It's what I've been doing since I was a little kid. I mean, so it's hard to like think of doing anything else, but at the same time, like when you, I don't know, like I just lost the passion for martial arts and so, I think I found it again, you know, like just going back to Minnesota to reconnect with somebody like, Greg Nelson, who is like the most realist martial artist, like in the game, you know, or one of the most realist martial artists, and just getting that passion again reignited. And then, you know, coming back home and being like, yeah, let me clean out this freaking garage that I've been trying to do for like so long. And I don't know. Now I'm just ranting and stuff, but yeah.
I'm just wondering if you were cognizant of those feelings going into the Jessica Andrade fight, or did they really just come out after the loss? And because it ended in such a shocking way, scary way, then that's why you verbalized it. Like, were you feeling that way even going through the training camp in that fight and were just not really feeling, you know, the love for the sport and all that?
Yeah, I think, after I beat Joanna the second time, it was kind of like, you know, like I've always felt like, you know, just a lack of interest in fighting like anybody else other than Joanna, because she was like so up there. So for me, it was like hard for me to even get up for the challenge. Like, I know everybody's like, oh, Andrade is so strong and this and that, but I don't know, just something about her, like her style is so predictable, and it just was hard for me to get like super motivated for it. So like, even like accepting the fight, I was like, yeah, I'll go to Brazil. Maybe subconsciously that was me like looking for that like thrill or that excitement, because it was just like I had already conquered the mountain kind of a thing and faced my demons. And then it was just like it was just a lack of purpose from the start. Besides for the fact that like I was also equally as shell shocked from the last experience, that I was just like I got into a point where like I didn't want to leave my house unless it was for like for money. Like I'm not, you know, whereas when I first started, we would always go on adventures and do things for fun. Like not like traveling wasn't just a job. It was, you know, to learn stuff and to like explore and do different things. And then we stopped doing that because things got so rough and things got so like difficult, for me. So I think taking that fight was a kind of a subconscious effort in my part to like just break out of that and just, you know, like just get out of my freaking house. You know, it's like kind of a dumb way to do it, but that's just the way I do things. Sometimes I go extreme. And then after that, it was like a huge relief. Like, even though I lost and stuff, it was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, I can finally go and do different things. I can, you know, see my family. I can, go to the last fights. And that was like the first time I actually really enjoyed myself at fights in a long time. So like, I didn't get this weird, like I usually go and watch fights and I get like freaking all kinds of like jittery and like, you know, scared and stuff. But this last time I was like genuinely enjoying myself and like having a good time.
I remember, and this is something that I sort of hypothesized after the fight, because I remember talking to Demetrius Johnson after he lost and he was kind of happy. He was, you know, there's that old saying, like heavy is the head that wears the crown. He felt like a weight had been lifted off his shoulders when he was no longer champion. Anderson Silva alluded to this as well. And so was there a part of you that felt like being champion was a gift and a curse? Yeah, it's great to be the champion and you're the queen of the division. You got all this love and accolades, but there is a pressure that comes with it that sort of sucks the life and the love out of the game for you.
Yeah, I guess, especially because like I made it into everything that I didn't want it to be, you know. I like didn't want the belt to define me, and all I did was make it define me, and that was all that was on my mind every day. Even though it's like not even in my own house, and it's like it just consumed my every thought. It was, you know, and it turned into a shackle and chain rather than just like I just love fighting, and like, you know, I want to be the best, of course, but I don't need a belt to tell me that I'm the best. Like I already know. So, that it was like weird. It was like all of my fears and all of the things that I didn't want to happen ended up happening, by just like fearing it so much.
And by the way, how was your neck in the aftermath, your head? And that was a very scary thing to watch. Were there any, you know, repercussions? I mean, in the moment, obviously you were knocked out, maybe concussed, but that could have been a lot worse, as you probably know. How did it feel in the days and weeks after that fall?
You know, what's really weird is like, I've had other fights where I got punched once, or I, you know, maybe a glancing blow, or we hit the ground once and I have like aches and pains and like hurting for like months after the fight. But this last one, for the past few training camps, I've always had like migraines and headaches leading up to the fight, because of like whatever's going on back there. And like after I got slammed, honestly, like there was no pain whatsoever. And I haven't really felt those type of pains like since. So it's almost, I feel like it was kind of a miracle.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
It was actually a good
thing. Like it almost, I think so. I mean, sometimes like, I think it's only good things in life. You know, I think it's just depending on how you look at it. So like the only thing that really bothered me about it was just how much it scared everybody else. And like, because I've been in a situation where like someone I really care about is fighting and something happens and that's really hard to watch. But yeah, so sorry, my phone's like, but yeah. And so that was the only thing, like, but physically, like, I honestly feel way better.
Have you had a chance to rewatch that fight yet? Because I felt, and I think a lot of people felt, that first round, You never looked better. I mean, you were like a young Muhammad Ali out there. You were dancing around. You were like a butterfly in and out. The jab was amazing. The footwork. I mean, you looked phenomenal. Yeah. I'm not trying to make it feel worse, but you just looked so on point. And it's even more amazing considering how you were feeling going into it. And so I'm wondering if you've watched it and how you feel when you watch it.
Yeah. I mean, there was obviously, it wasn't all doom and gloom. I mean, my training camp was like good for the most part. There was just certain things that were off, and mentally and spiritually, I think that was the main thing. Like, but physically, you know, we had been doing different types of conditioning. Like we were dragging a bag, like, in the backyard. So like I had a lot of drive and horsepower. Like I pretty much ran over, you know, the everyone calls her like a bulldozer and all, or she calls herself a bulldozer, but it's like, I feel like in that first run, like I didn't feel any of her strength. You know, I know that like, you know, she probably had a game plan and all this stuff, but like, you know, like I know everybody's talking about her strength and stuff, but honestly, like I feel like I'm the strongest girl in the division. So to me, like I didn't feel that. And especially with the striking, I felt more crisp and more fluid in my striking than I ever have. It was just a lapse of focus, and I got lazy. You know, she did crack me good with that one left hook. That, you know, that's her like her main punch that she throws. So, but it was more kind of like there was a bunch of things being suppressed leading up to that, and that just kind of was the I guess the catalyst to me losing focus. So, you know, props to her on that. But as far as like my preparation and stuff like that, and my like the skill levels that I feel like I've made, the jumps that I've made, I feel like there were, you know, I never felt better as far as that was concerned. But, you know, there was some things missing from the grappling side of things that, you know, was kind of like my bad, but at the same time, like I know what to do going forward.
So you mentioned that you have now regained the love. How did you regain the love? Was it just that meeting with Greg Nelson, the trip back to Minnesota? How exactly, and when did you feel like you got it back?
Definitely like going back there was like one of the more noticeable experiences that really was like, man, if I could feel like this every time that I am in a training camp, and if I feel like this, and if I train like this for a consistent 8 weeks, like there's no one that can stop me. That's how I felt. And also it just was genuinely fun, and just being around somebody like Greg is like, I mean, he does martial arts like 24/7. Like he's always doing, you know, he's always constantly a ninja, and like it's not just, and you know, that's the other thing. That's why it's hard to find people like that, like in this day and age. Like there's a lot of coaches that are specialties in one area and or the other. So it's always hard. It's always a challenge to like bring everybody together and be on the same wavelength. And it's just cool when like even like somebody having somebody like Pat in my corner is very essential too, because he does have that full MMA experience and he's not just coming from one aspect. So yeah, that's definitely like meeting up, like going back to Greg's gym just to get that spark again was definitely like, I would attribute it to that.
Has the UFC reached out about an upcoming fight yet?
Yeah. But I mean, I just kind of leaving it out in the open right now.
Okay. But you do want to return and you will fight again.
Yeah.
Do you know when you want to fight again?
I originally thought like January, but that's kind of coming up soon. So like, we'll see. But definitely like in the new year sometime, like whether that be February, March, it don't matter.
Of course.
I'll probably know. Yeah. Better like in a month or two.
Okay. And of course, you know, since that fight, there's a new champion. Her name is Zhang Weili. She beat Andrade in an amazing performance. Is there a part of you that just wants to go back in there and fight for the belt, or do you not really care about that? You just want to fight whomever. How do you feel about her being champion and now not Andrade being champion and going after the belt right off the bat?
Yeah, I think Whaley looked great, and I always want to fight the best, and clearly she is right now. So, but you know, I want to test myself against her, but at the same time, like whether that be this next fight or, you know, get a win under my belt and then go after that, it really doesn't, you know, I have no preference at the moment. Like right now, it's just, it doesn't matter who I fight, but I think, yeah, you should always have your eye on, being the best. So that's what I'm striving for. And, you know, whatever steps that I got to take in order to get there, you know, that's what we'll do one step at a time.
Do you feel like, all right, yeah, the love is back and you're going to keep going, but maybe not for very long. Like maybe you have a couple more left in you or things like that, because maybe that feeling will come back again. You could become champion again and those same feelings. Or do you feel like you've learned the lesson and now it's just wide open?
I will say this, you know, like I've learned that you should never make plans, you know, like because things end up changing. It's not that you should never make plans. I mean, I don't want to really fight in my 30s. So I have, you know, 3 more years on my clock. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm not going to say that for sure, you know. But okay. I say I have 3 more years where I'll be interested in this.
Okay. And is there anything you're going to do differently now as you embark on maybe this new chapter that you don't want to, you know, recreate from the last run, so to speak, the lessons that you learn? Are you going to change things around you, where you train? I don't know, just in general, do you feel like you have to do things differently?
Yeah, I think you always have to adapt and grow. So I see myself going back to Minnesota again to see Greg one more time. And I also see myself utilizing Pat in my corner, Pat Barry, because I say Pat Barry, not just like, you know, not coming from a fiance, like, or, you know, husband, wife standpoint, but like from a coaching student standpoint, because for the last few years, you know, I've underutilized him in my camps and I've relied a lot on my other two coaches, Tony and Trevor. So, that's another thing that I'm going to change. I mean, you got the mats up in this gym. I still got to put up a mirror over there.
I like it.
And then, yeah, over here, it's going to be some weights. And, well, there's already some weights, but I just need a squat rack and stuff and whatnot. But, so just like little changes here and there. And then, yeah, what else? Yeah, just taking more responsibility for things. And when I write.
Okay, maybe we got another call there. This has been a theme. This happens when people are on via FaceTime as opposed to Skype. Although I do like the FaceTime better because the connection is often a lot better, as you can see there. So we're going to reconnect with Rose, who I can't thank enough for doing this. Her honesty and her passion is really special. She is one of those athletes who has been comfortable in the past talking about her feelings and mental health and the nerves going into a fight. And I think a lot of people respect her for that. I know she's one of my wife's favorite fighters because she's very relatable in that regard and always very honest and forthright and authentic with her answers. And this one's certainly no different, this particular interview. Let's reconnect with her right now. I do believe we have her. Rose, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, sorry about that. And I was just wondering, I saw you recently training with Donald Cerrone. And I'm wondering if he's going to be a part of, or was that just a pit stop? Is he someone that you're going to be training with more frequently?
I mean, that would be great. But, you know, that wasn't really part of the plan. You know, we just kind of, that ended up happening. But he reached out to me because for an opportunity to be in this like music video, which ended up turning into more of like a short film thing. And so that's kind of a project that we're on right now. It's like halfway done and, I guess, you know, we'll have to like reconnect on as far as like finishing it. But, yeah, it was a cool little, like, I guess, change up in what I've been doing and stuff. So obviously, like, acting is, like, super hard for me, but at the same time, like, I think that I'm pretty natural at it, but at the same time, like, it's something that's pretty hard, so it's, I don't know, it's a nice little different challenge and a change-up, so that's kind of what we were doing out there.
And you mentioned being back in front of fans at a fight recently, and it felt good, it felt different, UFC 244. Could I ask, like, what the reception was like? Like, did people, because you have been sort of out of the limelight for a long time, and you seemed happy there when they put you on the screen, it was great. What were people saying to you, and why did it maybe feel different? Do you feel like it just felt different because you're now, you know, you're now a little more clear about things, you feel like you found that love again? Why did this one feel different than times that you've gone in the past?
Just, like, the fans in general, like, I thought it was going to be annoying, but everybody, like, asking me when I'm fighting, but it really, like, there was only a few people that really asked me that, and honestly, like, when they did, it was more out of, like, concern rather than, like, you know, just wanting to see blood. So, but either way, it's, like, it don't matter. Like, I think I was just in a different state of mind, so that was, I think, the key. And I don't know, I really enjoyed myself and enjoyed, like, everybody putting it on the line. And, you know, it was just such a huge event. And then just really being able to take in the Madison Square Garden, like, setting. Like, when I won the belt, I wasn't able to do that. You know, it was weird. I just, like, ran out of there and, like, didn't take it in. Everybody's like, how's Madison Square Garden? I'm like, I don't know, you know. So it was kind of strange and ironic how we were, like, back in the same place. But I was able to, like, enjoy myself.
It was good to have you back, especially 2 years after you won the belt, almost exactly 2 years in the same building against Joanna. So yeah. Good to see you again, Rose. I really appreciate the time. I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate you coming on, and I wish you and Pat the best. We hope to see you back there soon.
All right. Thank you, man.
All right. There she is. Thug Rose Namajunas. So great to have her on the program once again. I really appreciate, you know, the way she is so open with her feelings, the way she is so honest with how she's dealing with things. And it reminded me a little bit of what happened with Anderson Silva and what happened with Demetrius Johnson. This is something that a lot of fighters have discussed over the years. And I want to thank her for coming on. And I'll stop bothering Pat and Brian for at least a few months. All right. So in a matter of moments, we're going to play our interview with the great Nick Diaz. What an interesting experience that was. Of course, Nick Diaz hasn't talked in a very long time. I think the last time I had him on this show was November of 2014. There was a press conference in Las Vegas. It was one of those big press conferences where they did the time is now, and you know all that stuff. For, you know, the upcoming fights, and, you know, they had all the fighters there. And so he was on the show, and that fight was happening in January of 2015. And so, he was on the show, and of course a lot has happened since then. He fought that fight and he got, you know, he got suspended afterwards because marijuana metabolites were found in his system, and it was his third offense, pertaining to marijuana being in his system. And initially he was suspended for 5 years, and the suspension was met with outrage, and the suspension was met with anger. There was a White House petition. Sean McCorkle was leading the way. And it was very interesting because, you know, he had to take some time off. We didn't know. It was eventually reduced to 18 months. It was just a very stressful time. In the end, 18 months, but he hasn't fought since. And of course, a lot has happened to his brother since. And so in a matter of moments, we are going to air my interview with Nick Diaz. We're going to take a quick break and then come back with it. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Nick Diaz. It happened last Wednesday night, very late in New York City. We spoke about a lot. He had a lot to get off his chest. Let's not beat around the bush any longer. Here's that conversation. It has been a while since we had the opportunity to talk to this man. What a privilege, what a pleasure it is to see Nick Diaz once again. It has been several years since you sat down and talked to me, Nick. I really appreciate the time this evening. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, it's been a long time. The former Strike Force and WEC welterweight champion, one of the greatest of all time. Fans were so happy.
I've had a pretty rough week.
Okay.
Actually, but I mean, I guess you can imagine if you could. It's crazy because, like, I do, you know, like you were saying, we had the big, all the thing and all the fight and all this stuff. But people were like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I'm happy, because my guy had me set up, some really good seats and everything. But, you know what I mean? I usually try to, like, stay focused on what is important to me during these times, especially when I got, like, you know, this magnitude of what was what. So I'm, like, telling these guys in the back, like, yo, you know, I'm happy to be here. Cool, I got to go and, you know, say hi to everybody, which I love to do, and deal with everybody wondering what, you know, looking at me, right? But then my brother's fighting, so I'm like, okay, well, as long as you don't have me out here for my brother, you know, my brother's fight, you know, it's like you got President Trump there, and then you have all this security and, like, serious security, though, that, you know, gives me a little anxiety, you know what I mean, extra, especially when I feel like, you know, if this type of a show that I run, I don't have to deal with, especially at this point in time in my life, I don't have to deal with nobody, but, you know what I mean, like, you know, my level of respect towards what was really going on there was, like, you know, so it just makes me nervous because, like, my normal mentality, you know, I had to, like, take it back a notch, but I really had to be a part of what was going on too. So that was a stressful day, and I knew I was never going to be able to deal with that day if I planned for it. Mm-hmm. So when I had the opportunity, I just kind of, like, you know, kind of went with the flow, and I had to tell them, like, yo, I know it's not, you know, it's not cool to be, I can feel, like, the level of intensity that was there, not just because of the fight, but because of the extra, you know, and I was like, I can't just be up and moving around and walking like I do or I have to, you know what I mean, like, out here, and so, like, my sense of security goes through the roof, but I had to go, like, into that situation, like, with the opportunity, you know, to be a part of the whole thing, and it was just, it's just really not my thing to be responsible for, you know, everybody else but my team and myself, so that was really putting us, like, in jeopardy, you know, a little bit, and especially me, too, because, I was trying to definitely, get the most out of it for both of us and for, you know, for Nick Diaz Academy and for, you know, Gracie Fighter and my team, Shields and Jake and everybody, you know, on Team Gang. So, yeah, that was I had a rough week. So when I say, you know, I like to start off anything with no BS, you know, because I learned, you know what I mean, like, you know, being full of shit always comes back to get you in the end, so it might as well just be transparent. I've had no problem doing that from the very beginning. You know me, like, I'm just like, I didn't have any room to have an ulterior motive. I got started, like, you know what I mean? Like, this guy, he fought my brother, and, you know, all due respect, it's like, this guy was like 205 fighting in the backyard with, you know, and with all due respect, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Kimbo Slice was a friend of mine, too. But you know what I mean? Like, I was doing this backyard stuff way before, you know, everybody knew who Kimbo Slice was because he was doing, and I was doing the YouTube stuff, too. I was well aware of it. I'm like, Joe Rogan, I'm way ahead of you. You know what I mean? What can I tell you? You know what I mean? Like, everybody's like, oh. And I'm like, I all due respect to Joe and everybody and, you know, you as well, especially, you know what I mean, for giving me the platform. But, I mean, you know, I'm like, you know, all those people, all them people that come out on Joe Rogan podcast, like, those are all, like, those are all the, while everybody else was focused on, like, what was hot or what are you supposed to be wearing or, like, you know, I had a stay-at-home girlfriend and I was, like, you know, 3 to 5 fights a year or something for 17 years. All I was doing was weight. What am I going to eat? You never, you know, after a while you realize there's more to life, but you don't realize that until they, you know, they take the gun out of your face and then you can go ahead and start to think like a normal person. So really, like, I've had like a good couple of time off and I'm like, I don't want to be hateful or grateful over the suspension I went through because I served it anyways. And the verdict was, like, you know, I'm not the bad guy in the end. So, like, I'm like, what the fuck is the problem? You know, I get accused, same thing. The only time it was a problem was the first time. And the first time, like, since then, y'all right, it turned from 50 nanogram to 150 nanogram because of me. And then from 150 nanogram, it went up. And I've never tested over 175 nanogram as far as I'm concerned. Then, you know, I'm not good with numbers, but those are the numbers I can recognize, you know. I've never had time to be good with numbers or small talk or, you know, what the f*** happy hour, you know. But, like, once they gave me a break, you know, so did everybody else around me that was, you know, important to me. But I had to give them a break, too, and I had to make, you know, a little bit of a separation before I could paint a picture. But I got a lot done. I'm like, and I did it exactly what I was supposed to be doing, just the way I should have been doing it at the exact right time. So, you know, and looking back, I'm like, I made no mistakes. Like, I never have. I can tell you the story, no problem, of course. I mean, of course, it's just because that's what it is, you know. I meet people now and I meet, like, you know what I mean? I meet people now, I meet girls. I'm like, there's no reason to lie or fake, you know, or have, like, I mean, I just tell you straight up because I didn't do nothing wrong. You know what I mean? So, and I'm always the bad guy. Negative light, dark cloud. Oh, sorry. Sorry you lost the fight. Oh, because I didn't show up to a press? I didn't do, what are you talking about? Like, people on my team wasn't going to elaborate that this was a must. You know what I mean? Like, because, you know what I mean? If I wasn't paying them, then they probably wasn't getting paid, and then I was missing out on paper. And, you know what I mean? The Ultimate Fighting Championships, they didn't have the platform to produce these numbers and funds that I needed. You know what I mean? They didn't have that to do what they needed to do with the platform that I built for them. You know what I mean? As far as I'm concerned, me and the rest of these guys that, you know, like, what about Jens Pulver? You know what I mean? I can start dropping names. I mean, look at, like, you know, who's someone who I thought was going to do really well, and I'm not to, like, you know, say that they're not doing well. I'm like, I don't know what's going on in life if they're not doing it well or not. But look at, like, you know, Bonner and Griffin. I'm going, like, they're, like, you know, pushing me to sign to do this show while Bonner and Griffin is like, they're telling me they're promising these guys, like, I guess these guys are going to do real well. Real well is in what? You know, then the Irish boy comes out here, like, brings the whole country with him, and then now, you know, he's gonna make paper because of numbers. Okay, I get it. You know, nothing to take. That's why, you know, I don't take nothing away from that guy. I mean, he got plenty to give, you know. but I mean, look, you know, it's just, like I said, I worked to build this platform. I ain't done nothing wrong. I did everything I was supposed to do to win. You know what I mean? But anyways.
Can I ask you?
You can get after. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, obviously we covered a lot there. I was just curious, since you brought up, you know, the fight Saturday night off the bat, what did you think of the fight itself and, of course, the controversial stoppage? How did you feel about it?
Well, I mean, well, it's my brother, so I hope they stop anything, like, you know. I mean, and then the thing is with my brother, I mean, like, like, I had a hard time dealing with this because of what I was dealing with. And he's my little brother. I'm going to ask him, you know, to, I'm not going to, you know, I got stuff to deal with. And the thing is they had me on the poster to fight this guy a while ago, and I don't even know why.
Masvidal.
Yeah, I don't even feel, I don't even know why. I don't know how that happened. You know what I mean? I got people running at me left and right talking about this now. I'm like, yeah. Elaborating a little bit, but I don't even know why I wound up on a poster with this guy. I'm like, I ain't no f***. What, you know what, you talk to me? Like, what, how the, what are you talking about?
You know what I mean? The story came out like late last year that you were fighting him in March.
But I mean, like, I'm like, I'm on a poster. Yeah. I'm like, oh, what the, come on. You know what I mean? I'm like, that's cool if I'm going to be fighting this guy. I look, what are you, why are you doing this to me? Like, you know, you're just giving this advantage and like giving more power to the opposite team. You know what I mean? No offense to the opposite team, but I'm like, let's just play fair a little bit here. And, you know, they always push me, hit me on, oh, let's not, you know, negotiate through the media, blah, 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 blah. And then when someone does, it's the right thing to do. And I didn't give a fuck, so I did. And then wound up the right thing to do. Then, you know, people copy me. I mean, like, I wrote the book, and I was just being honest, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I've been no lies. Like, why, how am I going to lie to all these people? You know, I'm, like, just pushing facts. It just sounded like gibberish when I was a kid because, like, you know, I might still sound like some type of thug life. That's why I get nervous about, come on, Ricky, look at your little collar and little thing. Yeah, I know. I know to bring you if I go out, you know, somewhere. Now, I know that now, though. I know now. I'm like, why? You know, bring Ariel out, like, you know, have a few drinks with him and, like, tell him, hey, can you please, like, you know.
But it's the same stuff since the beginning.
Yeah, but I'm not going to put that look. I'm from Stockton.
Yeah.
So, right. But you don't understand what that's all about. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I said. Like, after a while, you realize it's more to life. Like, you know, I was I was a little bit held down, like, by this whole thing. And not because I was a fanatic, though. That's why I can still, you know, stand my ground on the outside of the cage, because it's like, look, okay, all this happened, though, but I'm not a fanatic like these people are that want to be around me or be, like, trying to be what I, you know, and talk to me about that. I'm like, this is like, you know, I was done being a fanatic, like, once I started getting in trouble, and I realized, like, well, okay, well, I better go pro, because I'm not, you know, I didn't do so well in school. I'm like, oh, these guys are, and then that's what really gets me, too, is because, you know, a lot of these guys are a college wrestler, higher D1, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I wrestled, too. But I got in fights in high school, so I couldn't wrestle, and I couldn't make attendance. And I didn't want to make attendance, because they got motherfuckers out to get me. Because, you know what I mean? Like, I had a whole, everything I did was exactly what I had to do, and I did it for exactly the right reasons. And anything that I did, I learned from, but it was because, like, you know, of my own ignorance as to what, because, you know, I didn't have no one, my dad wasn't around like that, you know what I mean? He was at the same time, like, on account of just, you know, ups and downs in life, he was doing what he had to do. So it's not like I had guidance, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing about my brother. I knew, you know, it's hard, you know what I mean? Like, to watch my brother to go into this thing when I wasn't, like, a part of the whole system. But, you know, like I said, it's like, it's about communication, you know what I mean? Like, at some point in time, like, you know what I mean? There's ups and downs in life and with everybody. And you know what I mean? It's all about communication. So, you know, let that be a lesson to you, you know? And that's what I'm saying. It's not nothing against him. Like, that's my baby brother. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, like that's like the BMF, the 107, that's my belt. But I'm not going to get in my brother's way of taking it. You know what I mean? I'm like, as far as I'm concerned, that's my belt. I'm like, you just fought my baby brother. You know what I mean? And the reason why I say that, I'm like, he ain't got nothing to be mad about. Like, he ain't tripping. Like, you know, he Trust me. Like, we never skipped a beat. Like, I have ups and downs with everybody, but I have ups and nobody. With everybody, but never my younger brother. You know what I mean? We don't have that issue. We've been through hardly any of that issue enough to know that that's not what we need. And you know what I mean? Like there was a day I knew he got it. I knew he had it from the beginning. That's why I didn't mean to drag him into this, and I never pulled him or asked him to, but he just kind of naturally followed along, and that's why I thought it was funny when he started, like, you see these old clips of him people up when he was like, you know, 15 years old and shit, like in a pair of Valley Tudor shorts, like beating up like 40-year-old dudes. And I'm like, I know I do that. I know I can do that when I was, you know, 15 or 16. But I didn't know, like, he was just kind of like, you know, but that's what I'm saying. This was my baby brother. I mean, I've been showed him everything that he knows since, you know, as soon as I learned it, when I learned it. And that was after me being fighting pro and training jiu-jitsu 3 years before he even started. All of a sudden, he's fighting in these IFCs that I used to fight in, and I'm like, I can't believe this little guy. And when I saw in this last ordeal, I'm like, okay. I'm like, this isn't going good for us. And of course, I didn't go out there because I would have been acting a fool, like, in the middle of, and I'm not gonna run no corner because you don't do that.
Why not?
Because, well, if you don't work no corners if you're not intimately like, okay, in tune with, like, what every day, like, there could be secrets that, like, things that that he doesn't want them to let me know and I don't know about it. These are things that, like, you start to understand after a long time. Like, for example, like, when they took me out of the corner, when I really should have been in the corner because I was suspended for these last 5 years while I've had this dark cloud over my head when I didn't even really do anything wrong. I never tested over the limit. And then they had to elaborate on that. And these guys come back in these weird extra crew, come back and try to get you to pee so they could take this and then say that it tested 7 times higher. Just so, if I got to just say, well, I'm not good, I already peed for them, so I'm not peeing for you, then I bet you anything that they wouldn't have been able to do that to me. So that's how I see it. I don't know how y'all, you know, I don't know who sees how it is, but that's how I feel. And usually I'm right. I've been right so much. And all the times I'm wrong, I'm like, gee, I was right. So I'm like, and that's what I'm saying. Like I said, that was, you know, I'm right about that too. That's my baby brother. That's my BMF belt, 170 pounds. Like, I don't, like, where you gonna move? I don't even know. Like, okay, if I have Conor McGregor, and, you know, doing this. And I'm like, well, you know, like I said, the pawns go first in chess. You know, you go fight this guy. Nobody even thought my brother was going to beat Conor McGregor. And I'm like, that's a joke. Like, we all knew my brother, little brother was going to beat Conor McGregor. Like that. And he beat him twice. Give me a break. Give me twice. You know? And then I got to watch him taking, like, you know, foot to the face. Like, that was a hard time. You know what I mean? But, like, look, let that be a lesson to you. I don't give a what. Like, you know what I mean? Learn the hard way. He will. I did. I had to. You know what I mean? Ask somebody. Like, you know what I mean? And this is a simple conversation, you know. But it that shit, you know, is sometimes it's harder than a 5-round fight. You know what I mean? When you're coming out of the hole. You know what I mean? And I don't care if I have to crawl back into that hole to crawl back out of that mother again. So it ain't on me. You know what I mean? Like, whatever I got to do. You know what I mean? To do the right. But, I, you know, as far as how it's gone, like, people offer me a little fight here and there. I'm like, I already know what would have happened to that poor man. Like, look, I have no business in that man's life. Okay? Like, you earn the right to fight the baddest mother. The pawns go first. And that's all I have to say about that.
I think the question that everyone wants to know is, do you want to fight? Do you want to resume your career?
Absolutely not. It's not up to me, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm like, do you want some? Do you want some? Because, like, you can get... I mean, generally, I go in and I show somebody their life. It's up to them whether they want to deal with their, you know what I mean? Like, and that's just what I do. That's my job. It's been that way because I was doing that to people when I was 15 years old to get them to come with me when I was going to deal with, like, because I've been doing karate when I was a little baby, a little kid, you know, karate chop. Whoops. You know what I mean? Like, what, you know, I was karate. I was a real karate kid. You know, I took it hard and I'm like, I did everything right. And now that you have this legalizations and you have this, all these things happen and all during my, what I was going through on account of like, you know, step by step, like I'm getting a bar raised up on the edge. Now you're fighters that can smoke weed like all the way till like the day before or like the day of. Because you got the nanogram level raised so high because me and then after me, so many people, not only do these people learn how that I fight and how I got through it, they learn how I do it. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's why I had to start Nick Diaz Academy. And that's why I'm branching it. And that's another reason why I couldn't just run around and come back and be a part of this camp when, you know, like I said, ups and downs in life, you know, it's sad. You can't feel sorry for people. I tell these white belts to turn blue belts all the time. I'm like, you know, look, sorry that you didn't make it this year or didn't make it this time around. You're not, I'm sorry that, like, today you don't get a blue belt. You know what I mean? Like, this is not your big week, but we don't, I mean, like, hey, if you don't get with the program, bro, like, then it's not, you're not going to move forward. Because me, I was definitely not going to move forward in life unless I, like, did something. You know what I mean? And I definitely wasn't going to make it to school when I was punching kids and cutting their face in school. It's hard like being a fighter, but it should be, you know. But at least I had some sense of security when it came to learning, you know, martial arts. But, and as far, you know, as far as my brother's fight, my brother asked me to My brother asked me to take this fight if they'll give it to me. And I said, like, well, then I'm not, like, you know, I'm not begging for no fights. I don't give a f***. I'm just saying it's on you. That's on you, bro. Because, I mean, you already put me on the poster. You know, put me on the poster. And then, you know, whether it was, you know, I ain't blaming nobody, but, you know what I mean? It's like, we're already going to put, so you obviously already accepted the fight, so I set them on the foot right now. So, and then the UFC, I'm like, you know there's more money in this? I'm like, hell, you want to do something big, do it at Cowboy Stadium. You got Canelo's and all these other big fights happening at Cowboy Stadiums. I'm like, biggest thing I did was, as far as I'm concerned, was UNLV. That was, just seemed like a really big place. It was like, then the Japan arenas I used to fight in back in the day before the UFC monopolized that, you know, bought the damn pride up and threw the rules away so people could stall and run away. And then you got like all these jock boys. Oh, I should be a UFC fighter now because I could run and take them down and then stall and run away. And then when I get big, then I could do it for 5 rounds. It'll be the ultimate shape of my life when I do the most steroids. Now they're testing you for steroids, buddy. Like, come at me, bro. Like, you don't even know. Everybody I've ever fought has been on steroids. Everybody. Like, and then my brother, did you hear that shit? I'm like, what kind of whack shit, negative vibes did they put in that guy? He could have done that shit without me.
Is there a part of you that sees your brother for the longest time was, you know, Nick's younger brother, sort of in your shadows, now become one of the biggest stars in the sport? Do you take pride in that? Are you happy to see him become such a big star? He's beloved.
That's one of the last things somebody said to me was, you know, that's great, you know, like, look. So they're like, that's great, yeah, now your brother has everything you ever wanted and you have nothing. And I said, good.
That's not what I meant.
I meant.
Okay.
That. And that means that means everything to me. So that's what you meant and that's what I meant. Like that, of course, that means everything to me. You know what I mean? That's what you said, right? Like, oh, does that make you happy? Does that make you sad?
Not that you didn't have it.
I don't give a f-. That's what I'm talking about. That's okay. What had happened to me. And I had to elaborate on, well, how do I feel about that? I'm like, well, good.
Good. it's amazing. I'm sure you know this. The fans love you. Like, when you showed up at the weigh-ins, that was the story. Nick Diaz is with his brother. When you walked out to the cage with your brother, that was the story. Nick Diaz. They love you and they miss you, right? Every time. Well, Nick Diaz, but I'm sure you know that. I'm sure you sense it to a degree. And so I guess I'll ask, like, the most simple question possible. Will you ever fight again? Because I think that's what they really want to know.
The way that things go, I get in three or four fights a year, like, regardless whether they're, you know, signed for or not. It's just what, you know, how I wind up nowadays. But, I mean, I'm not to try to sound like, what do you think I'm doing? What do you think I'm doing with my time? Doing everything that I can do with my time. And there's always hostility around me, no matter what. So, I mean, this is a, what are you talking about? This is a bite mark on my arm.
Who gave you that?
Nobody.
Okay.
But I didn't hurt him, though. You know, I love him. I was like, look, you bit me because I had a hold of you, and you didn't need to bite me.
Wow. Is that recent?
You didn't need to be punching. You didn't need to be punching on me either. So I deal with shit like that sometimes, and, like, you know, I get away with it. And I didn't do anything wrong, because I would never do anything wrong to anybody. Because otherwise I would have that kid up. But he's just a kid. And that's not what you do. You know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, when they put me on the poster with that guy, I'm like, I have no business in that man's life right now. And he don't have no business of mine. So, you know what I mean? When it wound up, it wound up. And, you know, I think the only reason why he took that, I'm coming to conclusion concept with this conversation that never ends. He's like, people walk to me, don't talk to me. I'm famous. So, like, no, I'm like, what is it that you have to say? Like, we want to talk fighting? Okay, well, let me just start to elaborate while my whole life passes me by. But I'll go ahead and do that because I'm still trying to figure it out for myself before you even walked up. And when I ask me, like, well, how, and I'm like, and I go ahead and tell you right then and there. Like, so I'm like, I know y'all don't have time to do that. I'm like, let's talk about, oh, who do you know train harder, who put more miles on the road, who put more miles in some weird chair like this, by the way. What the fuck is this? I'm like, I'm sitting here before this thing gets, I'm trying to, like, move it. What the?
I'll let them know.
No, it's fine. But yeah, there should be, like, a little recline. Like,
I feel you.
What is this, ESPN? Like, and there's, like, this thing, this weird chair. I should just get going, like,
get
chill or something. Fuck. That's how it was when I got here. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so I don't want to deal with that, though. And I don't need to. But, like, you know, my brother asked me to say what I have to say, so I said what I say. I'm like, what? I'm like, you, and that's what I'm saying. I said, no disrespect, but game recognized game. I'm like, you know what you need to do. Like, this ain't no up to no UFC. We've seen that in the past already. And I don't need to do anything more than what I've already done here. Come out here and do the most to, oh no, what the fuck am I going to say? Hopefully I didn't, you know, use too many F-bombs and act like some thug life sitting here in this air heel with this, you know, type of way. And me with me, you know, I don't know what, I don't know, it's like, I don't know what to tell you, people. I'm sorry. I'm like, but yeah, you know, all I know is I've got a whole lot of people that feel the same way. You know,
Nick Diaz Army.
I didn't start it.
You didn't start Nick Diaz Army?
Nope.
Who started it?
It just accumulated. It accumulated.
But it seems stronger than ever. They always go out of your way, out of their way to give you props. They're always saying that you're the best.
All I'm saying is, like, I never wanted to fight. I had to.
Right.
And you need to do what you have to do, too. And that's what you should do.
Who are you talking to?
Everybody.
Okay. One time I made the mistake of asking you before a fight a long time ago. I'll never forget it. I asked you, are you excited about this upcoming fight? And you told me to never ask that question again, that you don't get excited for fights.
Hey, I'm just doing what I got to do.
No, and I understood where
I'm
you were coming from.
I'm a guy who's always been out to do what I got to do, you know what I mean? I was worried about my baby brother, so I took care of my baby brother. And, you know, hey, my baby brother, he's a family man now. He takes care of the family. Mm. You know what I mean? You're a family man now, you take care of the family. I'm like, what? You know, and I got that spiel about, like, oh, great, oh, yeah, your brother got everything you ever wanted. You, like, what do you have now? And I'm like, well, that's all I ever wanted. I take care of my baby brother. He'd be a family man. He'd take care of the family. Me and Bob Bird, what do you want from me?
Would you prefer he stop fighting at this point?
Oh, of course. But I'm sure he would prefer me stop fighting, too. As he should. But, you know, while it's hot, it's hot, you know? Like, as grown-ups nowadays, we don't always tend to consult with each other the way we would have in the short time that it was before the past that I was talking about.
Do you wish you were closer?
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, things that I'm not ready for, and I wonder growing up and all, and, like, you know, having, like, a family situation, like, that's a big deal. I know, like, I ain't saying nothing new. Like, you know, this kid, he's got having children. I'm like, I'm leaving town. So, you know what I mean? Like, but we're very clear. We're very clear. We see how clear we are. I go back and deal with what's going on in there. I'm like, yeah, you know, this is what goes on. And it ain't nothing new, but I don't blame nobody. It ain't as far as nothing new. I'm the one that makes something new. So I gotta come. I'm supposed to come do my job. But, you know, I don't mean to put it on him. I didn't put it on him. I was just like, look, you know, like, you know what I mean? When you want to make moves, like, you consult with your people. And, like, it's just kind of hard when there's a lot of stress, you know, and ups and downs in life. And without jiu-jitsu every day and separation of moving and seeing what's really going on, it's like, you know, it just causes, you know, a little bit of a lack of communication. That's all. It's not a big deal. That's why I said, let this be a lesson to you. I'm like, hey, I got the same cuts on my face, you know what I mean? You go to Dr. Frank, he fix all that stuff. You go to Dr. Frank Styles MD, he fix all that stuff right away. You won't ever get cut again like that. That's an old cut, boom, open up real quick. So he asked me about a thing about the stoppage. Yeah, I said, yeah, it's a good stoppage because my brother. But should you stop the fight? No. I'm like this guy's like, I'm going to have to be very cautious and very hesitant before I just jump on in and just do what I normally would do. And I'm like, not only do you know that, but you say it's not like, and if it is that you're just like, oh, I'm standing over your brother because I want to torture your brother. You trust me, you have nothing against my younger brother because, like, he didn't do anything or say nothing out of line to anybody and do anything wrong. So why are you going to do the most? He wasn't doing the most. He was doing all he could do. And then they stopped the fight when I heard Tyson Fury got cut real good. Like, and they let it go, like, bigger than that cut. 12-round boxing fight. Who knows when the last two rounds could be on the ground? No, who knows the last two rounds when he got hit? I don't know. Whatever. You know what it is. I mean, maybe that's, like, the idea because this is the idea. Put this fight together because all I see is dollar signs right now. It's not on me. You want to talk about baptizing my younger brother? That's on you. I never had nothing disrespectful to say, but, like, you don't talk about baptizing my younger brother. So you're already in a position if you fight with me. You don't talk about baptizing someone's younger brother. That's my baby brother. You don't talk like that to nobody. So, you know, who rides on whose side? Like, you know, that's what I'm saying. Like, you want to say that? You know, you want to do that? You want to walk? That's on you. And I understand you have, you know, who knows, ups and downs in life too. Oh, I can relate to you. That's why I ain't mad at you. But it's like, you know what I mean? if you want to walk, that's on you. But you know what you have to do.
You think you can cross the line?
I think that nobody else has any say in this except for me and the person who's in the rightful position. So, and I'm only coming forward because I've been summoned for the most part.
By who?
Just, the whole MMA
the game?
Fan base demographic. And, I mean, and my younger brother, because, you know, he just told me straight up. Like, so I'm like, oh, that's why I'm here. I'm like, and so.
What did he say to you?
Yeah, he just said, like, you know, ain't nobody can get away with this blah, 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 you know. Like, it ain't the time for that. I think he was just mad, too. Mm-hmm. But, maybe he should have talked with me then. Maybe he's talked with me before. But I'll tell you what right now, real quick. I'm really glad about this, too, so I could get this in. Because I never, you know, with my shit races sometimes. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll tell you this. Tell you what about that. Well, my brother fought Conor McGregor the second time. Like, I was gone. I was dealing with other things, you know. Like, I've been trying to open a new gym in a bigger city for a long time. Just to make a, you know, just to, why not, have like, different types of higher and lower end clientele when it comes to demographics, where you're at, whatever, you know. Just, it's interesting to me. I'm like, I'm working with different people. I got all kinds of jiu-jitsu bumps. I'm living in Stockton. I got to be taking care of these kids. Like, what the hell? You know what I mean? After a while, you realize there's more to life, right? So we got a gym opening right now in Hollywood, right next to a Russian Voto spa, too, which is really nice, especially if you're somebody that cuts weight all the time. So you learn how to kind of, like, relax and let the damn weight fall off you and talk about it and have these conversations that you can't have if you're all, like, crazy. It's time to... And so, you know, that's a nice place, too, especially for people who want to do, like, a little bit of private lesson, group lesson.
Opening next week, right? Very soon?
What do you call it? I'm not doing no grand opening, but I'm just going to be using this facility until we build a little bit of what's what. And then, maybe we'll, you know, set it off and have... but I'm pretty sure I can, you know, do what I want to do with that. And I also... I used to live in Dallas, too. That's what I'm saying. Like, man, like, I'm trying to do one of these gyms in Dallas. I'm trying to do one here. I'm trying to teach jiu-jitsu at least, so I'm not going to be fighting pro. So, well, yeah, of course, my head's in the game. I'm ready to fight, but I'm, you know, I want to give back a little bit. I mean, I guess I feel like I'm not really a taker. I've always been a giver. So I might as well just keep doing what I do best.
It sounds, though, after what he said about baptizing, correct me if...
It's a term you use. Like, it's a way you talk. It's a weird, crazy way you think. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have that in me, you know what I mean? Like, but I understand, like, you know, I've also been more blessed by the public on account of, like, you know, exposure, on account of me having the hardest time ever. And so whatever misunderstanding I've had leading up was on account of just missed time that I had, just, you know, out, you know, just, you know, being a regular day-to-day type of guy, being a regular person. I was just really... worked up. But the one thing that I came to realize was I was never fanatical. I had a job to do and I did it, and I didn't have time to worry about what people think, how people feel about that. But I got to see how they feel about that, and then I'm, you know, action reaction, and then I see through this whole thing. And so, like, it, you know, it is what it is. It is exactly what it is. And, you know, that's the thing. When you're an MMA fighter, you're like, oh, my God, man, what do I do? Why don't I get to, like, people are asking me nowadays. I'm like, they've always been asking me, though, is what I realized. You know, it's just the other aspects of life that I missed out on, kind of, you know, it left me a little insecure with what was going on around me. So I had to go and, like, you know, separate myself a little bit from this fight game until I seen what's what. But that has nothing to do with why I wasn't fighting. I wasn't fighting because, for one, anybody who I could have picked a fight with, this is not even morally and ethically makes sense for anybody. Who's gonna? I don't like you for that. If I'm looking in at me and you do that, I'm like, okay. Oh, you got to feed your family. I'm like, well, I fed mine. You know. And that's just how I feel about that. And that's all I have to say about that. I think I, you know. I feel like that covers a lot.
The irony is, though, that you were suspended, you know, for 5 years, and that suspension, that 5 years is coming up in 2020. And
yeah.
Everyone was so mad, you know, people spoke up, they reduced it to 18 months.
I don't like to raise a pity party, but my whole career has been a loss. Like, every fight I won, every fight I lost, if that's, like, yeah, maybe I made the money, and but I never got to be, like, cool. Man.
What do you mean?
You know?
People love you.
I never, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a fighter, but, like, I was never out to, like, you know, drive nice cars unless I could afford them. I wasn't going to rent them. Mm.
Are you happy, Nick? Are you happy in life? Is life good?
No. No. My brother just got kicked in his face. And I've been having a really hard week. And I could fight. I mean, I could fight. So.
When would you like to fight?
You know. Well, you know, what I would have liked to have done was the New York Marathon is what I would have liked to have done.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would like to have done. But all this my brother fight stuff has been kind of like, you know, leaving me out of my zone. But meanwhile, like, I got this gym opening up. Real quick in LA, and I like that. You know, I'm glad to have made that move. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you fight that much, it's really, sometimes it becomes the glue. Or sometimes that becomes the glue that keeps you in relationships, and those relationships are the glue that keeps you grounded where you're at. You know what I mean? And that's okay, you know, because I learned one day, I'm like, all right, well, sometimes it's like, everybody's like, damn, you need to cut your circle shorter, you need to cut your circle shorter, you always got all these, you know. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, after a while, I found, you know, in some ways, you know, he who travels with alone travels faster. Who travels with you learn this when you're by yourself a lot. But, you know, he who travels with others travels further. Mm. And as you can see, like, you know, I have others. You know what I mean? I'm like, where are your motherfucking others? What did you do? You know what I mean? Like, and that goes for everybody. But I'm definitely the most decorated with others.
Do you ever sit back and watch your old fights?
Makes sense, too. You know, I never got to be one thing, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Always been like a piece of this or a piece of that, or some of this. I could vibe here or there. You know what I mean? Hardest time was with you.
What do you mean?
Well, not you, but like you in general, just like, not even like, just like a, you know, a tailor-made version of yourself. But like, but that's okay. But yeah, that's why I got started fighting. I don't have any animosity or anything against any of that, but I got started fighting because I wasn't cutting it in school. You know what I mean? I was no prom date to be had. You know what I mean? Like, just stupid shit. You know what I mean? That matters big to people, and that's why I'm not telling, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, hey, kids, drop out of school. You know what I mean? Be a fighter. Like, please, no. Like, by all means, no. If anything, I tell you, don't fight. Mm. I've been saying that, like, from the beginning.
Yep.
But I'm like, but if you are, if you're going, if you're, you know, I'm like, then do it like this. You know? This is how you do it. I'm like, trust me, I've been there. So,
Do you have a relationship with Caesar?
Absolutely.
How's that?
It's just a little far and few between right now because, you know, it's just a lifestyle right now. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not living, I'm not on those hours. I'm not doing those things. It's safer to me, for me to stay away from people that are, and it's safer for them too. When I have a fight, if I'm training in a fight camp and I'm like, you know, around those people, it's not very safe for me unless, like, you know, my head's in the game at this day and age. I know how to stay healthy. Like, all the fights I've done throughout the day and everything that I've invested in as far as longevity, it takes on a whole new meaning and makes all sorts of different sense nowadays at this day and age. And Like I was saying, like, right, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, I just turned 30, I'm like, next year, I'm gonna feel old as a number. You know what I mean? I'm gonna feel old as a number. And I've always had that in my head, like, right about that age, you're gonna feel old as a number, so I'm like, I'm definitely not there yet, and even when I hit old as a number, I'm like, if anybody, like, I'm definitely way more ready than you to go ahead and deal with what I gotta do. And there's nothing really more to say about it. You know what I mean? Like, I did everything right. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, I don't go home and cry myself to sleep, though. I'm like, I guarantee. But I know at this point in time, like, anybody takes a fight with me, I know I'm not going to be the one going home and crying myself to sleep after practice. I've worked that hard to where I don't have to, like, you know, I'm like, at the end of the day, you have a good night. It's like, okay, well, you have a good night. I had a bad night, but I'm not going to waste my time like being worked up about having a fight.
You don't do these often, so I just want to ask, like, is there anything that you want the public to know?
Probably, but I'm not going to come up with it. You know, I like to make a long story short, but I mean, I can never do that as it's been in the past, and I don't know. Oh, you know, he goes on tangents, and I'm like, no, I explained to you exactly what the f*** is going on. So, it's on you, folks. You know, it's on you, Dana. It's on you, UFC. That's on them. It's in your hands now. Cowboy Stadium. What? Like, what? Oh, go fight, and then what? Okay, so, like, you know, you guys suspend me for 5 years and all this, like, crazy, like, crazy, weird, inner conspiracy type of weird shit happens all the time.
And so if the UFC wants to contact you, how do they contact you? Do you want them to come to you?
Yeah, that'll happen, no problem.
All right.
I'm done saying.
Nick, I appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And we'll see you soon, hopefully. But I wish you the best.
Yeah.
Hey. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, that's the bad guy.
No.
That's the bad guy.
Where you come from, people like me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, sometimes they could get that. I just, hey, you know, nowadays there's a way to deal with that.
Thank you, Nick.
So there you have it. There's my conversation with Nick Diaz from last Wednesday. Appreciate him sitting down. I know he said a lot. I know that was very unfiltered. In fact, it was longer than that, but we shortened it for time. And so let's see what happens here. Let's see if he's able to get back on track. Let's see if he's able to get a fight, if he's able to get the fight that he wants. And it sounds like he is unhappy with some of the things that Jorge Masvidal said. The baptized line really stood out to me. But as of right now, no real serious talks there. But he said Cowboy Stadium. Afterwards, when the interview was over, they talked about March, April, his team. They wanted to reiterate. They want to come back in the spring. They want to fight Cowboy Stadium. They want to fight Jorge Masvidal. They wanted to make this very clear after the fact, and also clear that they spoke to Nate and got his blessing to do that interview. And so we'll see what happens here. We'll see what happens from this point forward. For now, though, let's move along to our next guest. He's been patiently waiting. He is the reigning defending UFC heavyweight champion. He is the king of Cleveland. He is the one and only Stipe Miocic, who's kind enough to join us today. Stipe, how are you? You know, I have to be honest, there was a moment yesterday where I actually thought of, we don't really talk about this sort of thing, but I actually thought of canceling this interview because your Browns stole one from my Buffalo Bills yesterday, and quite frankly, I have a lot of harsh feelings about the franchise right now for what they did. So I thought about it, but I just love talking to you so much that I didn't.
Those are lies. Those are all lies.
It was a great game. Did you watch it?
I did. I did watch it. It was, yeah, too close.
Yes, but good for the franchise to get back on track. So it's good to see you, my friend. It's good to talk to you again. It has been a while. You have kept a relatively low profile since the victory. Any particular reason for that? You last fought in August, of course.
Yeah, no. Just, you know, me doing me, you know, enjoying the family, enjoying the time off. You know, can't complain.
You know, this is, of course, your second reign as champion. I'm wondering if this one, I know we're sort of in the embryonic stages of that reign, but does this one feel different? Like, do you enjoy or appreciate being champion more this time around than the first time?
I mean, I'm always grateful and blessed, you know, I had an opportunity to fight for the title and, you know, winning it was even better. And then, of course, you know, losing it and then getting it back from the same guy that beat you is even better. And, you know, it's awesome. I mean, I can show my daughter, you know, just sure. Sometimes you get knocked down, and I get back up.
Yeah. Do you sometimes have moments where you look at the belt and you're like, all right, everything last year that we had to endure, had to go through, it was all worth it. Here it is.
Yeah. I guess so.
There it is.
I'm just happy. Yeah.
Which one do you like better, by the way, the new or the old one?
I like the old one.
Why is that?
I feel like it's constructed better.
Ah, interesting. Bigger, maybe bulkier.
No, it's better constructed.
What do you mean by that?
Like, nothing's falling apart.
Oh, so things are falling apart on the new one?
Yeah.
Like what?
Good. Don't worry about it. It's all good.
Right, fine. Okay, fair enough, fair enough. So just weeks after, you know, you won the belt, we found out, and it sort of flew under the radar, that you had eye surgery. And I don't think many people knew that you even injured your eye in the fight. Could you tell us what happened? What led to the surgery? Before we actually talk about the surgery itself, what actually led to it?
Probably multiple eye pokes from my last two fights.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely didn't help my cause. And, you know, getting punched doesn't help either. But, I got done with the fight and seeing spots in my eye. And I see, like, just never saw before and just didn't feel right. So I actually went to the retina doctor, and he looked at it, he's like, yeah, and yeah, you got a tear in your retina, so it'll procedure, fix it up, so, you know, hopefully it's healing up and it's gonna stay that way.
Was it hurting you?
No, but I mean of course you got punched in the face, so yeah, it does hurt. And you know, I poked, but you know, it was just like floaties. It was like dark floaties in my eye, you know, and it's gotten better, but it's still there.
And are you saying, just to be clear, you were poked in the first fight and the second fight?
Oh, yeah. You watched it. Yeah, you know I was.
Do you remember, was it multiple times in the second fight?
Pretty sure multiple times.
Okay. And was it hard to see in the fight?
I watched it, too. Well, no, I mean, when you get hit in the eye, don't care who you are, it's going to hurt. You know, kind of blow your eye a little bit, so.
Okay, but you're saying you got poked, not just punched, right?
Well, no, I got poked 100%.
Okay, and so you had the surgery, and how did the surgery go?
So far, so good.
Okay.
I mean, fingers crossed.
So no lingering effects or anything like that?
No, not as of right now, no. So just, you know, playing and, you know, listen, I love fighting, but it's all about my eye right now.
Yeah.
as soon as that's healed, we get back on our haunches.
And have they told you what kind, you know, they being your doctors, have they told you what kind of timeline as far as when you could return to training full time and then, of course, return to fighting? What are you looking at?
I don't know. I talked to him a little bit, so I'm going to go see him here again in about a month.
Okay.
Do nothing extensive or hard. So.
Can you could see out of it now, though, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you want to keep fighting?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure you heard recently Daniel was on my show and he said he wants to fight one more time and he wants to fight against you and that's it. It's just one more time and he's done. I'm wondering if you saw those comments and if so, what did you think of them?
I think I saw something about it, but I'm not worried about him right now. You know, I'm worried about I getting better. You know, And, you know, we'll see what happens from there. But I'm not worried about him right now. I'm just worried about my eye getting healing up, getting better. And, I saw Tyson Fury's coming into the mix now here.
Ah.
So I like a new challenge.
Oh. So. Did you see that footage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a combat fighter, so he's definitely going to have good striking. But, I mean, anyone can make a 30-minute highway reel. I mean, he's still good, but, I mean, I can do that too.
Yeah, here it is. Actually, I think it was more like a minute as opposed to 30 minutes.
I was saying 30 seconds.
Yeah. What did you think? What, you think he's got something there? You think he's being serious about this?
Maybe not. I don't know. I mean, you know, good for him. But definitely, if he wants to step in the octagon, I love it. I'll step in the ring. I love the boxing.
Okay, really?
I would love to box him.
Why? Why would you love to
box him? He's a great fighter, you know. I love it. And he's a good dude, I think, and I think we put on a good show.
So you would actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, the idea of boxing him is more intriguing than the idea of fighting him in MMA?
Yeah.
Interesting. Why is that? Just because it's something new, it's something different?
Yeah, something new, something different. You know, I mean, and with mixed martial arts, there's a lot more, you know, to go with it. You know, you got like a bunch of martial arts to worry about. You know, with that boxing, that's all we got to worry about. We just, you know, go toe to toe, slug it out.
Yeah. Maybe I mentioned this earlier in the show, maybe like a two part series, so to speak, like an MMA fight followed by a boxing fight or vice versa.
Yeah, listen, I'm down. I love it. I think it's a great idea.
Would it be fair to say go ahead.
Let's do it one night.
Oh, one night? Both fights one night?
Crazy.
That's absurd.
That is absurd. I would never do that.
Would it be fair to say, though, that this is just what I'm reading off you, this seems to interest you more than the idea of fighting Daniel a third time?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, what do you see? Like, I mean, I didn't, like, fluke knock him out, like, quick. I mean, I beat him. You know what I mean? I decisively beat him. And, you know, like, the first fight, you know, congrats, DC, but, you know, he caught me with a punch, you know, the first round. But, you know, there was, like, one on my mind that night. No excuses, but he beat me. But, second fight, man, you know, I won.
Hmm.
There's no taking away from it. And I didn't get lucky. I just straight, you know, worked him.
You were very vocal about the fact last year as you were, you know, frustrated with the process that, you know, you wanted the title fight. You weren't going to settle for anything else. Is there any part of you that is feeling like, all right, now I got the belt. I'm going to give you, you know, I'm going to make you wait. I'm going to make you be frustrated and sit out and wonder if I'm going to grant you this. Are you going to try to give him what you were feeling last year type of thing?
Yeah, maybe not. Well, he put it on him. He's poked me in the eye multiple times, so I got, you know, worked my eye done, so that doesn't help my cause. I can't really train hard or do any of that just because, you know, I can't really go extensive and hard. But so we'll see what happens. But yeah, right now, like, it doesn't really intrigue me. More of the Tyson Fury, I like that.
Okay. You know, it's funny. You were at the Boston event not that long ago, around a month or so ago, and they put you on camera, and you did not look very happy to be there. Like, the look on your face was like, I'm not too thrilled about the idea of sitting here and being on camera. What was going through your mind? Do you remember this moment? They had you and him on the split, you know, the split screen there, sort of like this situation right here, although you seem a lot happier right now. What was going on there?
I don't know. I think I was looking at my phone or something. I think I was watching, like, a baseball score or football or something. I don't know what I was doing. I was watching college football or something. Nothing with that. I don't care about that. Whatever. It is what it is.
Okay. All right. Because he was like, hey, all excited. And you were just like, and I didn't know if you were not happy being put on camera or something like that.
Oh, no. Well, I know. It was, I didn't know. I didn't even know that I was going to be on camera until I looked up. Oh.
There you are.
You know, so, yeah, I'm like, hey. But yeah, no. There's nothing. I don't think I was mad at all. I think I was just kind of caught up in the moment, I guess. Just not paying attention like I usually do.
Are you able to work out now?
Yeah, but not like, I mean, like hard, just like stretching stuff and just, you know, I'm not trying to push it, you know, just kind of ease it in.
Yeah, so you could run and things.
When I was younger.
You could run and all that stuff, but you can't get punched, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, I'm not really running either. I'm just kind of just, you know, stretching and trying to stay flexible and just, you know, just being careful just because, you know, I'm not young anymore. I'm a little bit older.
Sure. But they have said like this because I know the eye is so serious. This won't preclude you if you want to continue from fighting at some point once it fully heals. There's no fear of that, right?
No, I actually talked to the doctor and he said, no, it should be good.
Okay. We saw those photos of you when you came back and they made you, I think you were scrubbing the toilets at the firehouse while wearing the belt. Was that real, or was that just for the photos?
They make me do it every time. It's funny. They get a kick out of it. So I have one of my buddies. He's like, better bring that belt. So then they did like some fangry at the station. It was a lot of people showed up. Actually, I was surprised.
Yeah. I don't know why you'd be surprised, but like the reaction this time, as opposed to the first time you won the belt, did they rib you more? Did they make you do more stuff?
It gets worse every time. They don't care. They have no shame in their game. They just want to make me feel tiny and like I'm worthless.
What was the worst thing that they made you do?
Well, just like the toilet stuff. I mean, they'll make me stand in front of the apron by myself and just wave to people and just in the middle of the day just stand there and just wave and just wave. It's just like so annoying. You know what I mean? Like, and you got to do it because you don't want to be that guy.
Of course, you can't be the diva, right? The diva champ.
No, I try to be, but they don't care. They shut that down real quick.
Are you still going as often, or are you taking some time off?
No, I'm working on Wednesday.
Like, after winning the belt, when was your next shift?
Question. Probably a week, not even.
You took a week off?
Yeah.
Slacker.
Yeah. Listen, I got a lot of things. I mean, I'm a fighter. I'm a firefighter. I'm the Nose World Order champion.
That's right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I have to keep up with. You know, I got to stay busy.
Well, actually, since you bring this up, I'm going to put you on the spot right here and now, Stipe, okay? In December, there's a pay-per-view in Las Vegas. I don't know if you know this. I know you don't like to travel very much, but there is a – oh, yeah, you have the belt. Corporate Jake telling me. Here's the belt. Here's your belt. Although I gave you one. I had to buy a new one. Here it is right here. Yeah. There's the belt. Sorry. My bad. So the belt is up for grabs. It's sort of like one of those things where it's like every time it's like a standalone tournament. There's a second edition of the Roadshow in December in Las Vegas. Are you going to come back to defend your title?
I mean, I might be surprised. Yeah, I don't know yet.
Okay. Here I am putting you on the spot.
You kind of are. I feel terrible now. But you know, I want someone else to win it. You know, I want to keep winning it. You know, I mean, I'm a lover.
Okay, that's very humble of you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
All right, so TBD, whether or not you'll be involved. Talk to your people, sure. Basically.
Yeah, for sure. I got you.
All right, fair enough. By the way, before I let you go, I know, you know, we're a couple months removed, but I know one thing that you'd love to do, especially when you're in New York and it coincided with your sort of victory tour after the fight. You like to go to the firehouses in New York, and it coincided with 9/11 when you were there. And you went to one of the main firehouses, I believe, in Midtown Manhattan that suffered a lot of casualties. I'm wondering what was that experience? I think it was the Midtown Firehouse. What was that experience like for you?
It was called Bat Cave. They called it on the Bat Cave. It's humbling, man. It's you know, just because they do work. I mean, they're nonstop, and they told me stories, and it's just, you know, you could just see it in their face. You know, someone got a little emotional about it, but just, you know, you just think about that situation, about being put in that situation, and knowing, you know, you know what you signed up for, and you're gonna go in there, and you're gonna do whatever you gotta do to get everyone safe, and you don't know if you're coming back. You can just see it on all their faces, like. They lost a lot of good friends, family members, and people.
Do they know who you are when you go there? Do they appreciate the fact that you're a fighter, but also one of them as well?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. I hope so. And maybe, you know, it'd be kind of dumb if I walk up there and they're like, "Who are you?" So, I mean, honestly, they don't really admit it. They don't believe it or not. They're just good people. So honestly, they'll take you in, hang out, you know, share the station. They love doing that stuff.
Okay.
I'm proud of what they do.
And by the way, do you feel, you know, Francis is very frustrated these days. He wants to fight you. He wants to get a fight. Do you feel for Francis?
I don't know. I mean, I put a clinic on him too, so I'll do it again.
I like this. I like sassy Stipe. This is great.
Yeah. Right. I got time to think now.
Yeah. So the message in short is not so interested in the DC fight, but interested in Tyson Fury. That's how you're feeling right now.
Yeah, I love the fight, Tyson Fury. I mean, a lot of the boxing, we're supposed to come MMA. I mean, great, awesome. I think we put on a great show. I think he's a great competitor, and I think he'd be awesome.
And the idea of fighting DC in the retirement fight doesn't do much for you?
I'm not worried about him.
Okay, fair enough.
Just like he is with me, you know.
Ah, there it is. That was the question I just asked you.
But, So now I'm important, or I wasn't important. You know, now I am.
All right, so we'll see how – and you don't know what month you'll return yet?
No, just like I said, I'm healed up. Once that gets taken care of and I get the okay from the doctors, I'll start getting back into it.
Okay, but next year, fair to say, 2020?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yeah. Let's do that one in Cleveland whenever it is, right? I mean, I feel like we need to go back there. That was so great, that fight.
It's pretty awesome, not to lie.
The atmosphere was like – I can't believe they haven't gone back since.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why they haven't came back, but if I was that guy or matchmaker, I wouldn't be fighting.
All right. Well, we appreciate it and wish you a speedy recovery, obviously, Stipe. Hope everything goes well with the eye. It recovers nicely and that you can get back in there soon rather than later. Thank you for doing this. I know how much you love doing this, so I really appreciate you coming on.
So excited. Let me tell you something. I woke up at like 6 in the morning. I was like, oh, God. We did the aerial show today. I'm so excited.
Yes. Hey, The Rock even shouted you out earlier.
Hey, was it good or bad?
It was tremendous. He said that he would like to what did he say? He said, I would like to take out Stipe Miocic. He said, actually, we have the clip. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, well, please. I would love to see it.
Okay. Just 1 second. We are, quote unquote, efforting, as they say in the business. Earlier today, of course, I spoke to Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I'd even bring you up. He brought it up himself. He brought up your name. And for a second there, I thought we were about to make worldwide news. We thought that we were going to blow the headlines out of the water, whatever you want to say, as I'm just trying to kill time here. Oh, they can't get it. Ah, that really sucked. I'm sorry. What kind of rinky-dink operation is this? Basically, what
Never
he said,
again.
He said he wanted to take you out to dinner.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice, right?
Yeah, I'll take him out also. I mean, like we could like do like a date thing, you know?
It would be nice. Oh, you mean meaning I could come too?
Now you're pushing it, dude. Nah, it's like...
Okay, we have it. Yeah. Here it is. Here's The Rock talking about Stipe.
And I know that everybody wants to know if I have ambitions to get in the octagon. And again, the truth is, look, I know you're going to have Stipe on.
Yes.
I'm going to take him. I can take Stipe.
Oh.
I can take Stipe to lunch.
There you go. You hear me say, oh? I was like, wait a second. Is The Rock calling out Stipe here? This will be the greatest moment of my career, but take him to lunch. So there you go. The ball is in your court.
Awesome. I'm going to have to tweet him now.
All right.
I like steaks, lobster.
Thank you for doing this, Stipe. I appreciate it. Get well soon.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
All right, there he is. The reigning, defending, Helwani Knows trivia champion, the one and only Stipe Miocic. Corporate Jake, put this on the poll if you can. Who do you want to see Stipe Miocic fight next? Do you prefer Tyson Fury, Daniel Cormier, Francis Ngannou? What do you think? Put him in that order. Let's see what the people say. But you heard him very clearly there. He wants to fight Tyson Fury. He wants to fight him in a The Rock. Yeah, put The Rock on there too. No, don't put The Rock. Yeah, sure, whatever. Put The Rock if you want. Go crazy. Go wild. Or you could do boxing and MMA for Tyson Fury. I think you only get 4 shots. But there you go. Good to hear from the champ. Good to hear from the man himself. And certainly hope that he has a speedy recovery and the eye heals up and we could see him back in the octagon in the very near future. All right, so now let's go to one of the very top contenders in the 170-pound division, the man himself. There he is, Tyron Woodley, outside of Unbreakable. How are you, Tyron?
I'm out here in the sun. Look at that little sneak advertisement I threw in the background.
Unbreakable. Is Randy Couture back?
Randy Couture is doing a movie the other day, so he's doing all right. I just talked to Sam earlier today. But yeah, I'm outside Unbreakable, about to go and try to break a hole in one of these bags, kick the hell out of it, and getting ready to get back out.
Okay.
Now, that last interview you did, I'm going to just let you know, because it was like his date. It was a date set up with The Rock and Stipe, or like what was going on?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, he threw it out there.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I know, but then he invited you, then you said the balls
stop,
were on his court.
Stop it, stop it, stop it. Stop it, stop it. So, Tyron, there's a lot going on at 170 these days.
Man.
Title fight coming up. I think
it's
everyone wants...
Popping, though.
Yeah, where do you fit into all this?
Shit, I'm at the top still. I mean, the rest of the stuff is for entertainment, but when we're talking about the real, real sportists, people that know and watch, I'm still right there at the top.
Okay, so are you waiting for the winner of Colby versus Kamaru, or as Leon Edwards has talked about in the media? Go ahead.
Leon Edwards said something, what he said?
Yeah, he said that he's been offered a fight against you, and his manager said on my show last week that they've been offered multiple fights.
Well, that's awesome for Leon. I'm happy for him that he was offered fights. You know, I just decided to let my managers get paid for it. I decided from now on, since I'm paying them already, shouldn't I just let them do the fight stuff and I just walk in and whoop some ass? So I decided to do that recently. So when people try to catch me at, like, UFC events or behind the stage doing the ESPN stuff and try to... And I just refer to... my manager, right, Malky?
Yes.
Call him or Abe and they'll... Shit, they'll get right on that for you. So that's kind of where I'm at right now because at the end of the day, y'all really don't want me to say who I want to fight and what's next for me. Because when I say that, no matter if I say Canelo or everybody, whatever. The Masvidal said Canelo, like, yeah, let's do that fight. And it's like, I recognize that my deck of cards is just fight whoever y'all want me to fight and beat the ass. If I do that, then I'm good.
Okay, so, but let me ask you, what is your perfect scenario? Yeah. Who do you want to fight and when?
I mean, my perfect scenario, to be honest, I want to fight the best the UFC has an offer right now. I want to fight, obviously, Colby. I want to fight Usman. I want to fight Israel Adesanya after I wipe out the division. And if I can get past that test, shit, I want to fight Khabib. I ain't going to be able to make 55, so Khabib will have to make a little jump up or something.
I can't.
Making 170 is not the sexiest thing.
Right. Well, you would go up to 185 for Israel?
I would. He big.
Yeah.
He a beast, though. I like Israel. I legit took a picture with him. I hardly ever take a picture with anybody. Because he is a star, man. Like, you can't really hate on it. Like, his presentation, the way he fights, the way he carries himself, he's just enough. He never goes too much. It all seemed organic. It seemed like something he can keep up for a long time. The walkout was my favorite walkout I've ever fought in my life. So, he a beast, though. That kind of gets... It's like when I fought Carlos... Like, I was such a huge fan of Carlos Condit. Like, man, I watched him so many years. I was so pumped to get ready to fight him because I knew the danger that he brought. And I feel the same way about Israel.
Right. So.
And he slapped my butt in the club one time.
Oh, really? Just man, like friendly.
He slapped me. Hey, what's up, bro? He slapped me on the butt and it was like, I wanted to be mad, but I know he was bullshit. And it was like, damn. But he still slapped me on the butt in the club. Everybody saw it.
And it was a friendly. It wasn't like he was trying to start something, right?
No, it was a friendly, like, good game.
Yeah,
what's funny? This is going to be a head. I just found your slot tire with me on the butt. Let's see which direction everybody's taking. I guarantee you.
Tyron, I couldn't help but think of you at the press conference a couple of weeks ago when Kamaru was getting showered with praise because of everything that Colby is doing. And I was like, man... This should have been Tyron versus Colby first, right? Did you watch that and see all the love he was getting and think, like, man.
I never got showered with the praise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got booed in Madison Square Garden. If I was fighting Colby, I would have got the most obnoxious cheer ever. But what you think about is, Colby is a bitch, man. He turned down a fight week three times. It's like, Usman should have never fought me first. You got to recognize, Usman was not even the next person to fight me, nor was Darren Till. I was supposed to fight him before Till on the September 8th day, why Usman took his damn shirt off. I don't understand that. One thing about the division is getting a little weird. That shit didn't make no sense. Why you take your shirt off? And Kobe, why you should wear that hat and look ridiculous? So that's another reason why I need to get my shit together because they're making us look bad.
Do you have interest in Leon? Like, do you feel like that fight makes any sense to you or no?
I feel like the way you just said it kind of just, you're like, I mean, do you even want to think about fighting Leon? I mean, or is it just like, all right. That's how you said it. And you know, the fucked up part is that my son's like, who is that? And my kids know everybody. They play the video game. So when you got to explain to somebody who the person is and how good they really are, I have to pump up the facts to the people and to the peers on how dope Leon is. Because he is dope. He got super crazy. Strategic, striking, super sharp, great cardio. He has a good IQ, switching shit around in RDA in the middle of the fight. So he's dope as fuck as a fighter, but I'm going to have to sell the fact on how dope he is. Meanwhile, I'm going to have to continue to promote myself. I ain't getting paid to promote him. So if it makes sense and the UFC makes it make sense with the dollar amount and my coaches and my, my team thinks that's the best move, then I'm a going to default to them because they know me and they know what my end goal is. My goal is to be the greatest of all time. So I got to go and get back my retaliation on the people that defeated me that I still can. I got to go beat Kobe Bischoff up because he clearly has ran for me three times after making his Instagram page 90% me. Extremely unmanly. And then after all of that, I still got to go out and say, okay, I went up a division and I beat up on Fatsum or I beat Israel Adesanya. And then I did a super fight against Khabib, who was still undefeated at the time, and nobody had the, you know, the answer to the puzzle. So that's what I got to try to do. And if I do all that shit, how you going to say I'm not the best? How you not say I'm not the greatest? You got to.
When would you like to fight? Let's start there.
Soon. I'm itching. I'm actually itching to get in a training session.
Okay, okay.
Wiz is here laughing at me.
Wiz Khalifa?
And we about to train.
Wait, you name dropping Wiz Khalifa?
No, we about to train. What the hell you think? Park waiting on me because I was supposed to do this interview earlier, but because Ariel Wani is a professional and the best in the world, I made sure I was going to make it happen.
Okay, okay, okay.
Me, him, Chevy, and Sean Merriman.
Okay, I don't want to take up too much. Can I just ask you two last things? How was Thailand?
Yeah.
And have you gone to Montreal yet?
I'm wearing it right now. Look at that.
Look at that.
Boom.
How was it?
I'm rocking it right now. I love Thailand. I'm going back to Thailand. Going back to Thailand in a couple of weeks. I'm going to start doing pre-camp out there. So I'm going to start, especially in the winter months, I got a tough time making weight just because it's so cold, especially in Milwaukee, negative 50 degrees. So I was, I got on the same outfit pretty much, just a reverse colors. But anyway, long story short, I'm going to start going out there because, one, the massages are cheap. The food is great. It's a lot of humidity. So in the wintertime, when I had the most problems making the weight, all those Madison Square Garden cards barely made it. The fight in December, you know, all those months, I'm going to preload the camp. I'm going to get my weight down low in the beginning. So I go into camp close to where I want to weigh. I go in there in shape. I've been out there kicking bamboo trees. I'm here for a couple of days. All right, hit me up. All right, yeah, then I'm set. So I go into there with that Muay Thai is like you got to be willing to be an asshole. You got to be willing to elbow somebody like I did against Steele over and over again and feel the nerve go through your elbow bone and your funny bone start tingling. And the person obviously almost going out. You got to be wired weird. And I wasn't there until I started training with Duke. He says it's called going black, turning your heart black. I used to, like, I had only landed two elbows in my entire career, two total. I elbowed Tarek Saffanin one time, and I elbowed Paul Daly one time. I had two total elbows landed in my career before Till. But I was able to switch that mode over. So when you do Muay Thai training, me and somebody in the face, kicking them in the head, elbowing them, trying to cut them open or knock them out, it wires you another way. So if I go into camp with 2 weeks of that first and then jump into camp, I think I'm going to be ready to run through a wall.
Are you still going to Montreal?
You know what? I don't know if I'm going to Montreal for this one. I said this one like I had a fight line.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. Wait a second.
Rewind that one.
I got excited.
rewind that. I'm going to Thailand, and then I'm going to Milwaukee.
Ah, okay. Do you have a fight you want to tell us about?
I don't have a fight, but I think I'm going to fight in January.
Oh, against?
I don't know. Somebody out there willing to take that belt with
him. Not Leon, though?
Who's counterfighting? Who's counterfighting? Did they figure that out yet?
It's trending in the direction of Donald Cerrone, yeah.
Cerrone? Okay. Okay, the fights are with people that can't box that well, wrestle. Them the kind of fights they want them to have. All right. That makes sense.
Okay, so January.
That makes sense.
But you won't say who. And you're ruling out Leon, or you're open to it?
I'm not ruling out nobody. Anybody that's breathing and bleeding can get it. Breathing and bleeding, you can get beat up.
All right. There he is. The champ is back. The chosen one. I'll let you go, Tyron. Much love. Thank you.
All right, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is. Tyron Woodley, Unbreakable Gym. That was the gym, by the way, that Randy Couture was at. That's a gym that's owned by Jay Glazer and a couple other people. Jay Glazer, great NFL reporter, Fox Sports, The Athletic. That was the gym that he owns, or that is the gym that he owns. And Randy Couture is an instructor there. And if you recall, just a couple of weeks ago, Randy Couture was working out at that gym and started feeling ill and was suffering a heart attack unbeknownst to him and walked himself to the hospital and then had the surgery and all that stuff and then walked home. Unbelievable. What a guy. So anyway, a lot of big wigs like Tyron Woodley, Wiz Khalifa, I think he mentioned him, train out of there. And I think it's in the heart of L.A., Hollywood. Famous people are there. Anyway, something like that in that vicinity. Matter of moments, we're going to be joined by a man who once fought Tyron Woodley and is all of a sudden doing so great at 170 pounds. I say all of a sudden, I mean, he's been doing so great for a long time. But check out these stats regarding one Damian Maia. Obviously, he won his last fight via submission against Ben Askren on October 26th. Has won his last three in a row after losing three in a row. And I think a lot of people thinking that maybe he was done. 22 wins is second most in UFC history behind Donald Cerrone's 23. 11 wins by submission is second most in UFC history behind Charles Oliveira's 13. So one more win and he ties Cerrone. Two more submissions and he ties DuBronx. Second most fight time in UFC history, 6 hours, 32 minutes, and 6 seconds. And currently in the UFC rankings, he is ranked number 6. Amazingly, this man just keeps on winning in his 40s. And I think a lot of people were writing him off. And I thought it was a great moment on Saturday. Anthony Rocco Martin, a guy who he beat recently, got a victory in Moscow. And by the way, we haven't had a lot of opportunities on today's program to talk about the Moscow event, but Zabit Magomedsharipov defeated Calvin Kattar and Alexander Volkov defeated Greg Hardy. Those were the two most notable results. But Anthony Rocco Martin had a nice decision win, and true to form, Damian Maia goes on Twitter and gives him props. And he does that, I think, with a lot of the younger guys that he's fought. I mean, you always see him pop up every time someone, there you go. You always see him pop up every time someone that he has fought does something notable, which I think is really cool. There's a bond that is shared there. And he wrote, "Congratulations, Tony Rocco Martin. Very solid, technical, and smart performance. You are a absolutely underrated, a really smart fighter as well as a very good grappler. It's not easy to win against such a tough Russian fighter. In Russia, great job." That's great stuff. I really respect that out of Damian, one of the classiest and most respected and beloved fighters in the UFC. And now he is kind enough to join us. It has been a while since we've had Damian Maia on the program. It's great to have him back on. He is here to talk about the victory and what is next for him. Let's say hello to the great Damian Maia. Damian, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing, Ariel?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you on the show. It's been a while. Congratulations on the win against Ben Askren. Let's start there. Did you think that the fight would play out like that? Because it did seem like for the first, you know, two rounds or so, predominantly, it turned into like a striking match.
Yeah. We pretty much, we knew that what could happen. We knew that, I thought he was going to try to take me down, but probably in the last minute of the round or last minute and a half, and try to stall on the ground. So we train a lot of like kind of Greco style to keep the fight standing up. And then when he eventually would take me down, my goal was like to right away to be ahead of him and don't let him stall. So we train a lot of be always ahead. Don't let him start the movement, but start before him to make him move and open spaces.
And at any point in the fight, did he seriously hurt you? Did you feel like you were dazed? I mean, again, there were some moments there where he was connected. He's not known for his striking. And so I'm wondering what it feels like to get hit by Ben Askren.
I didn't feel hurt, but of course he's an athlete. So he, you know, some of the punches he land well, but I didn't feel dizzy any punch. And I knew that I should, you know, keep in the pace. And wait for his mistake. I knew one thing that we train also is for me to don't shoot in this fight because he's a great counter attacker. He's a great wrestler, but mainly he's better at countering, attacking in wrestling than attacking. So everything that I always do, all my techniques, all my habits of shooting, we need to change that. So we train different stuff. Also on the ground, I knew he was going to be prepared for my half guard sweep. So I bring back some sweeps from the time, not just sweep, but submissions from the time that I was fighting jiu-jitsu.
To submit a guy who has never been submitted before in an MMA fight, does that feel a little different for you? Does that feel a little more special?
Yeah, that fight was really special because there was a really symbolic fight that everybody was talking about, you know, the fight against the best two grapplers and like pure grapplers. He really represents, you know, the grappling arts, and I'm the same. I don't think it was like wrestling versus BJJ because, you know, he trains BJJ, I train wrestling. But I think for sure it's a fight that the guys who really represent their arts to really, you know, try to implement during the fight. He does with wrestling, I do with jiu-jitsu. And so everybody was curious to see what's going to happen. Even I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I was kind of, you know, anxious because I didn't know if he was going to be able to stall me on the ground or not. But, you know, everything that we trained worked.
And so after the fight, he even talked about maybe not wanting to fight anymore, that he never really loved MMA. Did you see any of these comments? And if so, how did you react to them? How did you feel about them?
You know, I feel that I told him, and I think he's still pretty tough. It's not because the problem is like when he lost to Masvidal, a lot of people think, he lost in 5 seconds, this kind of thing. But that happens, you know, everybody knows, everybody that fights happens, that a knockout can happen. And doesn't mean that you're not good. And I think he's one of the toughest guys in the division, and I think he should keep fighting. His game is very hard for, you know, everyone in the division, especially to the guys who doesn't know really well grappling, because he's going to take you down for sure. And the way he strikes is like, it's not, people don't understand well, but how he hides his head and how he closes the distance is something that is awkward, you know, to figure out. It's not easy. People just think, this guy strikes, he has a beautiful style, and people say they think they are a good striker. But with him, he used his striker efficiently to do what he wants, which is getting the clinch.
You're 41. You just turned 41. By the way, happy birthday.
42. 42.
Excuse me, 42. Just turned 42.
Yeah.
So happy birthday. It's amazing.
You.
November 6th, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And here you are on a 3-fight winning streak after going through a 3-fight losing streak. And I think during the 3-fight losing streak, people thought maybe this is it. But you've signed a new contract. You beat Ben Askren, all this stuff. If you would have, you know, if we would have talked about this several years ago, did you really think that you would be doing this well in your early 40s?
You know, my goal when I started the UFC, I was 29. It was to be fighting until 40, maximum 41. But, you know, as time goes by, I'm feeling well and I'm enjoying. You know, I keep going. I think I have at least 2 more fights. And after that, you know, maybe I will stop. I probably will stop because I want to do some other stuff that I don't have time to do right now, but it's not because I don't like or because I don't want to train anymore. You know, I love to train. I love the camps for the fights, and I love everything around. So it's just because I have other projects that I want to do.
So you recently signed a new contract, right?
Yes.
And how many was that for?
That so we did for 3 fights, Bane being the first fight. So two more fights after the last contract. So Bane is the first one, and then 2 more now.
Okay, and let's say you win both of those fights. What do you think happens then?
Man, I don't know, but let's say I win and they say, okay, you can fight for the title. Then I will resign the contract. If, you know, I win and they don't give me a position, you know, don't let me know what's going to happen, then I probably will stop.
Okay, wow. And I know you said after the fight that Diego Sanchez is someone that interests you, but as of right now, it seems like he's not in the UFC anymore. So a couple of weeks later, have you thought about who would those last 2 fights be against, the ideal opponents?
No, not yet. You know, I'm talking with Eduardo, my manager and head coach, and we're figuring out now what we want, but I really, didn't talk too much about that. I finished the fight. I came back to São Paulo, 1 week, no training. Then I start to train again. Then I came to U.S. I'm in U.S. now for a couple of seminars, and we didn't really think about too much. I was just back on training like 5 days ago.
Okay. Are you hoping that both those fights happen next year?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Okay. I want to do those two fights next year.
And would it bother you, like, after the two fights, if they don't give you a title shot, will you feel unfulfilled with your career if you don't ever win that belt?
No, I don't think so. You know, Ariel, before, I remember a few years ago, I was thinking, man, if I win the title, I can die the very next day, I will be happy. But right now, my mindset changed a lot, you know, after my family, my kids, after I had that infection in my shoulder. And I think, you know, it's some kind of cliche thing to talk about, but I think I have a mission in my life. And I say that, you know, that is spread Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and go and talk about giving seminars and try to get people to training. And that's, you know, a bigger mission than just winning. So I'm very fulfilled because a lot of people, they consider me the best BJJ fighter in the MMA world. And that's something very important for me, so important as a belt. And also, you know, to have so many followers and to end my career, if I end next year, being the guy who represents Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu there. And hopefully, you know, get most wins in the UFC if I can pass Cerrone and this kind of things.
I know you're very humble, but do you consider yourself the best BJJ practitioner in MMA history?
I think, of course, I'm not going to say I'm the best, but I'm the one that represents most for sure. You know, all my game, you know, all my boxing training, all my wrestling training is just to be able to put my jiu-jitsu, the game. So I'm not a guy who trained boxing because I'm looking for a knockout. And I'm a guy who is looking for doing jiu-jitsu all the time. So everything that I do, when I'm training, is thinking about the jiu-jitsu. And I don't think other fights are like that. The other fights, they are more like, okay, if I need to strike, I will strike. If I need to go to the ground, I will go to the ground. I'm good on that too. But for me, it's all about close distance, get the clinch, and use my jiu-jitsu. So I think I represent most than anyone.
Will you want, like, those two fights, you have two fights left, right, on this contract. Do you want to get two submissions to tie Oliveira? And obviously the two victories that would surpass Cerrone if he doesn't win, like, are these things that you actually think about?
Yeah, for sure. That's something very cool. Before the fight, I never think about that because I don't want to, you know, get that in my head. But after the fight, it's always nice. It's always nice to have a record like that. And also, Oliveira is fighting this weekend, so I don't know what's going to happen. And it's a nice record for sure. You know, it's something that I always think about.
One of your very impressive victories as of late was the win over Jorge Masvidal. Are you shocked to see what he has become, you know, in the last year or so, how popular he's become, how good he has become after doing this for so long? What do you make of this?
I think, man, he's a guy who's been evolving, you know, all these years. He's a guy who is getting better and better and better, more dangerous. So I'm not surprised. I think, you know, I'm the same. I'm getting better also with the time. And I think sometimes people, they look to a fighter and they say, oh, this guy doesn't know to punch or doesn't know to fight jiu-jitsu. But they look the fights of the guys like 6 years before. And, you know, in 6 years, 3 years, 4 years, you can become a totally different fighter. And that's what is happening to him. And of course, he's good in marketing. He's good in talking. And the fight with Nate helped a lot because Nate is the same. But I'm not surprised. I think he's pretty tough. He's a great fighter. And, you know, he said if he win the gold, he want to give him the chance to fight against him. So, you know, I'm really cheering for him to get a title shot now, fight the winner of Usman and Kobe. And I will cheer for him for sure. I want him to win.
Yeah. Did you feel like that came out of left field? Like, were you surprised to hear him say that?
No, I was a little bit, but not too much. I think it would be nice, and I was a little bit surprised, but not too much. And yeah, that's it.
And just curious, Colby Usman, you fought both of them as well. Who do you think wins that title fight next month?
That's a very good question. Who do you think?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. No, I just want to know.
No, let me tell you something, Damien. There's one thing that I've learned in my career. It's that MMA fighters are the toughest, bravest people in the world, but they're also very sensitive. And when you pick against one of them, they get very mad at you. So
exactly. Because people are very egocentric, right?
Yes.
When people say, I think, like Ben asked when we were not there, I said, man, it's just the guy is a journalist. He should pick somebody. You know, there is no hard feelings about that. Yeah. But some people, they really, they have the ego too big. But I think it's a very even fight for sure. I think Usman is the favorite. I think he's more technical. He's great wrestler and great athlete and been proving that. But Kobe's a trick fighter. I always say that because I fought him. And he's a guy who, when you start to fight him, you think, you know, will be easy because the distance, you can connect some punches. But his pace is amazing. He keep going. And there is one thing that, you know, can change his fight. He's very good on make you angry. And I think he as you can see, he's doing that with Usman. Usman is getting out of his mind. So I think for Usman, it's very important to keep calm and don't try to go there and beat, hurt Kobe, but try to go there and win the fight. Mm. Because if you get in the fight mode and not in the competition mode, I think Kobe will have a bigger chance to win. I think it's very important to Usman understand that because Kobe is used with that, you know, he always trash talking, but for him it's the way he does. He doesn't change his mindset, but what he does is like something like McGregor does. He can make the other guy get angry and get, you know, rage and try to just beat him. And then when the guy gets frustrated because, let's say, he is not able to knock him out or something, he keeps the pace all the way and he has incredible pace. And that's how he can win the fight. But I think Usman is still a little bit, you know, favorite.
Okay. And finally for you, Damien, is there a secret to your longevity? I mean, you pretty much look the same. You're fighting just as good as you did when you came into the UFC. How do you explain this at 42? Is it just, you know, good luck, good genes? I don't know. But for athletes, for people, regular people who feel like they're getting older, like I'm 37 now and I feel like I'm slowing down a little bit. What has been the secret to your success and longevity?
I think one secret is like, you cannot make the same mistakes that we did when you were younger. Like, you have less space to mistakes. So let's give you an example. When I was 30 or 20-something, I could sleep bad. I could eat not so good and do all these things and keep doing well in training and in competition. Now, I need to take much more care about my nutrition, much more care about my sleeping time and the hydration, also something that I didn't pay attention in the past. And I think the most important things lays in the simple things. People are looking for secrets, like for the secret supplement, the secret conditioning training, or the secret technique. But the simple things like your nutrition, your hydration, your how you sleep, how your mind works, also you don't let bad thoughts go into your mind all the time and pay attention on that and be more aware of the things. I think that's the most important. And when you're younger, you can make, if you don't pay too much attention, you keep going. But once you're getting older, you have less and less space to make mistakes.
Amen. The words from the wise Damien Maia. And it's amazing, by the way. I love, like when you tweeted about Anthony Martin on Saturday, I love how you always you don't do a lot of social media, but you kind of pop up anytime someone that you have a history with, that you have fought, has done something notable. I love that you do that and, you know, keep that connection up with your past opponents. I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And also, you know, they are my opponents now, but in a few years they will be just, you know, former opponents like of me, and they will be guys, you know, nice guys who I share the octagon, and they have the same goals as I have, and I know how hard it is to get there and do what we do. So I have a lot of respect for all the fighters.
Damian, pleasure as always. Great to have you on the show. Great to talk to you, my friend. And continued success and congratulations on your recent success. It's amazing to see what you're doing at this age.
Thank you very much, Ariel. I really wish you go there, you know. And I'm in New York now, right now at Marcelo Garcia. You know, I just had a lunch with him. But I didn't know your the studio changed, and now you're much farther.
It's very, so, don't worry.
I had something to do here, but next time I go there.
No problem. I don't blame you, my friend. Thank you very much for the time, as always.
Thank you very much, Ariel. See you. Bye-bye.
There he is, the great Damian Maia, 42 years young. Has won 3 in a row, 2 more fights on his current contract. We'll see who they bring to the table as far as those fights are concerned. But all of a sudden, a player once again at 170 pounds. Who would have thunk it? And he has been able to reinvent himself and reassert himself as a player after that 3-fight losing streak, which I think is very notable. All right. So fun day, but we have one more guest to go. And I'm very excited about having this guest on. She is coming off an impressive victory at UFC 244. Just a couple of weekends ago at Madison Square Garden. She is, in my opinion, the number one contender in the 125-pound female weight class. She is Caitlin Chookagian, a.k.a. Blonde Fighter, who's kind enough to join us. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Things are going great. Congratulations on the victory. So there I was, Caitlin, last Monday. There I was. I'm done my show. I'm scrolling through Twitter as I usually do. And a tweet from you, because you're verified, pops up. And I'm like, huh, for a second, it gave me pause. This is the tweet right over here. Sick time talking to you today with the whatever that thing is called. And for a second, I was like, what? I didn't talk to you today. So is this sarcasm? What's happening? So I did reach out to your great manager, Lloyd, and asked him what's up. And apparently you aren't too happy with me. Is that a fair thing to say?
Well, no, I'm just feel a little left out. I feel like you keep forgetting about me. You didn't come up to me at the press conference again, I was like, oh, I won my show, probably getting a title fight, or I won my fight, probably getting a title fight. I'll be on Ariel's on Monday, and then I just didn't hear from you. I felt like you kind of just like stood me up.
So you were annoyed.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. I actually appreciate the fact that you put it out there and didn't keep it in. It was a little passive, if we're being honest, but I actually respected it. And that moment, I was like, you know what? We're going to have a big show next week. I didn't know that The Rock and Nick Diaz would be on, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to repay Caitlin and try to repair this relationship by putting her on this show. Now, how do you feel about me?
I feel a little better.
A little bit. But let's be like, I feel like it's always been sort of a thing. Like, you were upset that I didn't speak to Gregor, right? Your teammate at the media day as well. You feel like I'm not showing you the love that you deserve. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm number one contender again and win a fight, and I don't even get like a question asked or anything.
That's on me.
Just a little.
I feel you. But you know, they bring so many people to these media days. It's very hard to get to everyone. You know that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I saw you standing there. You could have came over.
Oh, man. Okay. So you were eyeing me down. You were, like, burning a hole through me with your eyes. Is that?
I was like, I know Ariel's not going to ghost me again at the press conference again. And that was it.
Okay.
It's all right.
But now here we are.
When I win the title, maybe you'll talk to me then.
Okay. Oh, I thought you were going to say when you win the title, then you're going to ghost me.
No, I wouldn't do that. I'm not that type of person.
Okay, fair enough. But I'm hoping that today's invitation will help repair things a little bit.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Congratulations on the win. Another impressive performance. Do you feel like you did enough in that fight to 100% assert yourself as the number one contender?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely did. I was number one contender going into the fight, and then, I dominated another. You know, her name was being thrown around as another contender, and then I dominated her. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I proved that I'm ready for the title.
And can you clear something up? Did they try to actually give you the title fight earlier, but it coincided with your wedding and thus you couldn't take the fight? Is that actually what happened?
Yeah. So they asked me, in the end of the summer, if they were like, oh, can you fight on the Abu Dhabi card for the title? It was in 5 weeks. I think it was about 5 weeks away. But that was on the 7th, and my wedding was on the 8th. So, on 5 weeks' notice, I couldn't. I didn't want to cancel my wedding. So I turned that down. And then you know, then she ended up fighting Liz Carmouche earlier, and I thought maybe, you know, after that I would get the title shot, but they said I had to fight Jennifer Maia first, and then we'll go from there. So just waiting to hear.
Okay, so was there a part of you, like, did any part of you, you and your future husband, did you even talk about rescheduling the wedding, or was that never even an option discussed?
He was definitely more pushing that more. He was encouraging me. He's like, you know, you should do it. You should do it. You should take the fight. This is, we can do this, whatever. But, you know, it was my decision, and I wanted to go through with the wedding. And I feel that, you know, as the number one contender, I earned my spot. I've never said no to a fight ever. I've always like turned down life events for fighting. You know, I was competing in Golden Gloves in high school and stuff. So I've been competing my whole life, and I think that I earned my shot to, you know, have a full camp and full camp for a fight. And I wasn't going to cancel like a life monumental, you know, day for that. I knew that I'm confident in my abilities, that even if I had to take another fight before the title shot, I knew that I would win, and, you know, it would all work out.
And so was there any part of you, because like they made her fight in August, or they scheduled her in August, so the timing then worked out because she obviously didn't get beat up in that fight. Did you think like, why do I have to fight someone else? If I was going to get the title shot in September, why do I have to fight someone in November?
Yeah, I definitely thought that. And I was super bummed out when I got the contract for Jennifer Maia, just because I was pumped, you know. After Valentina fought Liz Carmouche, she was mentioning my name, and you know, a lot of people were saying that I was next. So I'm like, oh, if Valentina's saying my name, and like, I know she's always down to fight. We'll probably fight by the end of the year. But, you know, for whatever reason, they wanted me to fight one more time before that. And they said, because they said she wasn't going to fight for a little bit. And I was like, can I wait and fight her? And they basically said no. So I was like, all right, well, I'm training anyway. I might as well take the fight. If I can't beat Jennifer Maia, I can't beat Valentina. So it all worked out.
Have they offered you Valentina yet?
We've been talking about it.
Ooh.
I haven't gotten an official contract, so.
But looking good?
Even when you get the contract, yeah, looking good. I'm excited.
Oh, and time frame?
Early next year.
Ooh, okay. So do you feel confident right now that your next fight will be against Valentina Shevchenko for the title?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yeah, definitely.
Pay-per-view or fight night, or what are we thinking?
Pay-per-view.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah. But like I said, we haven't gotten a contract.
Yes.
And even when you get a contract, and you could both, me and her could both sign for a contract, and nothing's ever sure. So, you know, hope for the best.
Okay. And how do you feel about going up against her? How do you feel you match up with, she's looked so good at 125. Do you see actual holes in her game right now? Do you see any weaknesses?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I'm confident in my game. I know she's been like super dominant, but I don't think that, you know, especially at 125, she's fought any girl that technically smart and high level. I'm like standing in the street of New York, right outside of Henslow's, so it's a little loud.
No problem.
But yeah, I think every girl that she's fought in this division is really tough and aggressive, but I don't think that they have high fight IQ, and they're not very smart or set things up. So I think that my style frustrates people and makes them look not as good as they are. So I think my style matched up with her is going to be different than all the other girls at 125.
Do you feel like you need, I mean, obviously you're going to a title fight, and a win over Valentina is a win over Valentina. That's supremely impressive. But do you feel like maybe there wasn't the same kind of momentum behind you because the victories have been decisions, and just the way fans are, they gravitate towards finishes? Do you feel like that has been playing against you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this today, it's so competitive, and you know, if you don't get a, you know, finish in the first round, you're boring, and all my fights are decisions. But you know, all my fights that I've won, you know, I don't get hurt. I never have, like, I rarely ever have marks on my face, and usually the other girls are, you know, I'm dominating wins. It's just, you know, technically. So people want to see finishes, and I understand that. So I think that's, you know, why I probably haven't gotten as much exposure and, you know, excitement behind me, just because of my fighting style. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, when I'm done, like, if the less I get hit, the better off my life is. So that's important for me. So if I have a fight where I'm dominating and not getting hit, you know, that's not just a win for me, but for like the rest of my life.
Sure. By the way, did this one feel at all different because it was the first time you were fighting as a wife?
No, not really. Not really at all.
All right.
Yeah, no, same thing. Yeah.
And a lot of people ask me after we haven't heard from him. I know he's your teammate. How is Gregor doing after the knockout? It was a little bit scary.
Yeah, no, he's doing really well. He was he came over last night. We have we do like Sunday dinner at our house and stuff. We're really close, so yeah, no, he's doing really well.
Okay. Any sign of Mark Henry after the devastating Buffalo Bills loss yesterday? Have you seen how Mark reacts to the Bills games? Have you actually witnessed this?
Yeah. Well, he's crazy all the time. So whether the Bills are playing or it's just a normal day, he's always hyped up. So yeah, he's crazy. I haven't seen him since he got back from Russia. He's had a busy 2 weeks.
Yeah, his son, who I'm friendly with, Pino, told me that he turns off all of his notifications when he has to travel on a Sunday, deletes all the sports apps, and watches the game, even though it's long over, watches the game beginning to end, and a game like yesterday that ends in heartbreaking fashion, he will put himself through the entire thing and text updates to his son, and he knows the result already, knowing that he's about to be heartbroken, and then his wife is filming him from the kitchen, and the reactions are just absolutely crazy. It's just an amazing sight. It's an amazing thing. He's such a great guy.
Yeah,
he's a character.
I love his wife sends Snapchats of, you know, hidden Snapchats of Mark going crazy in the house. So that's pure entertainment.
Yes. All right. So I feel, and by the way, when I was curious about this, when Joe Rogan set you in the post-fight interview, that was a classic Caitlin Chookagian fight. Did you take that as a compliment?
I mean, I think some people might not, but for me it was. I'm like, yeah, I'm not even injured. She didn't touch my face and no injuries on my face and a dominant win. So to me, I'm like, you know, would it be better if I was all busted up and it was more entertainment? Like for me, I'm like, I didn't get injured. You know, I'm at the gym sparring today and, you know, I just fought a week ago and even last week I was sparring and training. So, you know, to me, that's what's the most important. I got a win and I'm not injured. Like, the whole point of fighting is to hit and not get hit. So that's what I'm doing.
Any reservations
to
about
me? It's a compliment.
And what about taking the fight against someone who missed weight? Did you have any reservations?
No, I hope that every single one of my opponent misses weight.
Yeah.
So I get that extra money.
That's right.
I mean, she was 1.2 over.
Yeah.
You know? I knew she came in super heavy. I knew she was like earlier in the week. I knew that she was really, really heavy. So I was just hoping that she would be over, but not enough to like get injured or like pass out cutting weight or something like that. So 1.2 over, I wish every opponent was 1.2 over.
Yes. And last thing, I mean, do you feel like you have allowed yourself, you're one win away from being a UFC champion and life changes when you become UFC champion. We were just talking to Rose about that. Have you allowed yourself to dream of what it could be like to have that belt, to be considered one of the great fighters in the sport today? Or do you not do that sort of thing? Are you not that kind of person?
I feel like I just kind of like take it as it is, no matter, like, you know, I've always like competed at a high level. Like in, you know, when I was in high school, I won the Golden Gloves for the adult division when I was like 16, you know, like, so it's kind of just like whatever level I'm at, I'm just kind of like, without sounding like cocky, I'm just kind of like, that's where I'm supposed to be. You know, like I'm excited, but I'm like not super surprised because I knew going into the UFC that I was going to fight for the title and win the title. I didn't go into the UFC like, wow, I made my goal becoming a UFC fighter. Like my goal is to be like a UFC champion. So I'm not, you know, I'm excited, but I'm not super surprised. And I know that this is where I always knew I was going to be here. So, you know, I'm excited and yeah, I just kind of like expect this to happen because that's what I always thought.
Are we good now? Are we cool?
Yeah, we're good. I just got to keep you in check a little bit.
I appreciate it. Listen, I appreciate it. I appreciate the sassiness. I want more of it in my life. When you did that, I was like, oh, she's definitely going to be on next week because I like that sort of thing. I like the friction. It's fun.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'll just keep you in check and then we're always good.
All right. As long as you're honest about it, no problems here on this end of the table. I appreciate it very much, Caitlin. Congrats on the wedding. Congrats on the victory. Sorry for slighting you. I'll never do it again. And I hope you get that title shot.
Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate it.
There she is, Caitlin Chookagian, joining us, the number one contender. I don't think there's any debate anymore. She is the number one contender at 125. And she mentioned early, I reported there's talks of a pay-per-view in February, potentially in Houston, Texas. maybe Dallas. I heard Houston was the front runner. We'll see if it all pans out. I've heard February 8th, so they haven't announced anything. But they did just announce, by the way, a show in Raleigh, North Carolina on the 25th. No word yet on the 18th. They're not announcing that yet until we get an update on the Conor McGregor situation. You heard Adi Attar last week on the program, Conor's manager, talk about the talks ongoing, progressing, right direction, goal line, if that means anything to you, American sports fans, but not quite there just yet. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, we had the UFC in Moscow. It was a very busy weekend in mixed martial arts because we had the UFC in Moscow. There was Bellator on Friday as well, Cage Warriors. You had KSI versus Logan Paul. I mean, you had all kinds of craziness going on. And it's another busy one coming up this weekend, Bellator in Tel Aviv. Which is always a lot of fun. LFA returning, good for them after the layoff. Now they're with UFC Fight Pass. One championship with an event, CFFC with an event. And, of course, the UFC back this weekend, as they often are, this time in São Paulo, Brazil. And it's an interesting main event. It's Jan Błachowicz going up against Ronaldo Jacare Souza, making his 205 UFC debut. So Souza is going to try to do what both Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman were unsuccessful in doing recently, and that's move up to 205 and win a fight there. Interesting co-main. It is Shogun Hua against Paul Craig. It was supposed to be Sam Alvey, but it's now Paul Craig, which, by the way, I actually like that fight better, the new fight, Paul Craig versus Shogun Hua. Charles Oliveira trying to extend his UFC record submissions. It is now at 13, which is where he is currently ranked, going up against Jared Gordon. Big fight for Jared Gordon. Good opportunity for him. And there's a bunch more fights. It all starts at 5 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Bobby Green, James Krause, Sergio Moraes, Worley Alves, Randy Brown, Ariane Lipsky. Those names. And then the main card is 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Do we have an update on the poll there? I know we kind of got it a little bit late in the show, but I'm curious what the people are saying.
Yes, so I made a slight adjustment. The fourth option was John Jones.
Oh, that's a good one.
So right now, Daniel Cormier leads with 34% of the vote.
Oh.
John Jones slightly behind with 28%, and Ngannou 24%, and Tyson Fury bringing off the back 14%.
Wow, Fury last?
Yes, just about 13,000 votes.
It sounds to me like the fans just don't want anything to do with this MMA boxing thing anymore. That's what it sounds like. And so I think that is very notable. Like, I didn't think maybe he'd be above DC, but certainly not last. That is very interesting.
And
DC
has responded already.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, decisively, congrats, champ. You're awesome. Run it back, question mark.
He's trying to kill him with kindness. That's an interesting strategy on DC's part. He's trying to kill him with kindness. I like that. I wanted to say just a couple more things before we say goodbye. Number one, quick postscript. I didn't get a lot of time to talk about the Nick Diaz interview, but if I have a couple of seconds here, because I wanted to get to Stipe, I saw him waiting. Obviously, last time I talked to him was November of 2014. Obviously, I've reached out to him in the past, had a couple things here and there as far as text message conversations, but never an interview, and he hasn't done a lot, and he's been through a lot. And so I knew he was in New York last week, and I'll give a shout out to AJ Agzarm, who is a good friend of his and trains with him. Also his manager, Kevin Mubanga. AJ reached out to me on Monday and said that there might be a possibility to talk to Nick, but, you know, he was a little hesitant. Tuesday came along, seemed like it was 50-50. And then Wednesday, as I'm actually leaving the ESPN studios in New York City, the South Street Seaport studios, about to get in my car and go back home, I get a text that maybe we could do it on Thursday. The problem was, Thursday wasn't an option. So we tried to make it happen Wednesday, and I actually stayed there. The deal was, you know, they said they'll do it around 11:30 p.m. It was 3:30 p.m. So I stayed there for 8 hours. And, you know, with Nick Diaz, as I've learned in the past, sometimes it's hard to get him to actually sit down. He doesn't love doing interviews. He has a little bit of anxiety, or maybe a lot. And so 11:30 comes and he's not there. Showed up at around 12, which was, you know, fine. I wasn't expecting him to be there at 11:30 on the dot. And we talked a little bit before, and then he sat down, and the interview went longer. Truth be told, it was around almost 145 or so as far as an hour and 45 minutes. And we felt like that was the, you know, the most pertinent stuff. And look, I know there's a lot of new people who are watching this show, a lot of new fans, and who may be saying to themselves, like, that's an interesting way of delivering an interview. What I would suggest is go back and look at some of the other Nick interviews from the past. He has always had that style, and he said it himself. Oh, I'm a little bit all over the place. I go on tangents. I will concede that it sounds different. And this is a byproduct of fighting for all those years, perhaps. But I will also say, remember, go back and that's just who he is. And I got the message, and they reiterated the message afterwards. And they said they want to come back, and they want to fight Masvidal, and they want to fight in the spring, and they want to fight at Cowboy Stadium. Who knows if any of these things are a possibility at the moment. Masvidal's manager, Malki Kawa, saying they'll have a response at 4:30. So stay tuned for that, 4:30 Eastern. So that's in just 9 minutes. But that's what they want. Whether he is in a position to truly fight, whether he's in a right mental state or physical state, only he and his team knows. But they reiterated multiple times that this is what we want, and we've gotten the blessing to go after this. Now, an update on Nate Diaz. He put out that tweet last week and said that, hey, I'm thinking, basically peace out fight game. I'm not waiting for a rematch. And then everyone kind of took that as a retirement. Lest we forget, he told me in the interview before 244, he'll never retire. He'll never say those words, and he'll never truly walk away. He'll fight forever, quote unquote. And he told me, there's the tweet right over there. I spoke to him Saturday night, and he said, I never said I was going to retire. Who said that? I'll fight tonight. And so here's Masvidal kind of playing, back and forth, but there is no retirement. I don't know what Masvidal is saying or whoever is tweeting for. I heard it might be true. No, there is no true. This is just part of the process with Nate and part of how he deals with it in the aftermath. So it's interesting. I'm curious to see where things go from here. I'm curious to see how the UFC wants to move ahead with Jorge, with Nate, and who knows, with Nick as well. I see the comments, I see the reaction to it, and of course there's a part of I think Nick is one of the most beloved figures in this sport, and I think we all, for the most part, the vast majority of us, want the best for him. And so maybe the best for him is to get back on track and start training and, start to take it seriously, because if you follow him on social media, he's been living a good life. As I said, he's almost having his 20s now in his 30s. And so this is an interesting story to follow, and one that I did not expect. I didn't expect to sit down with him after all these years, but I do appreciate him doing so and appreciate his team for making it happen. Lastly, before we go, at the top of the show, I mentioned that today is Veterans Day and Remembrance Day in Canada as well. And so we wanted to take a minute to honor the veterans who have served this country and thank them as well. The names that you are seeing on your screen right now, and hopefully you are watching this, are all the veterans currently working at ESPN. This is an incredible list of people, heroes in my opinion, and I just want to thank them. I don't know a lot of these people, obviously, but it's just amazing, and I appreciate the team for putting this together. As you see, Army, Navy, Coast Guard, Air Force, thank you very much to these men and women for serving this great country, for sacrificing. And I also want to note that two members of this show, two very important members of this show, Brian Metzger and Sierra Davenport, are also veterans as well. Brian Metzger is often our director. He does a phenomenal job. Not here today, but I want to thank him, and I want to thank Sierra as well for their service and for protecting this country. As we know, freedom is not free. These men and women are the true heroes. So thank you very much to them, and I'm honored to call them colleagues. Thanks to them and all the veterans from the United States and Canada as well. All right. We are out of time. It has been a memorable day. What a day it has been. Wow. I am emotionally exhausted at this point. But when I did this show 11 years ago, these are the kinds of shows that I dreamed of, and this is what I always wanted the show to be, and I'm happy and proud that it has become what it has become. Now, if you know me, it's 4:25. At 4:26, I'll start being anxious about next week's show. That is the prison that I live in. That is my personal hell, if you will. But I guess that's what makes me me. So, thank you very much to all our guests. I appreciate all of them. Thank you very much to Dwayne The Rock Johnson for joining us today. Crazy to say that. Can't thank him enough. His agent, Brad Slater, telling me that this was the first live interview that he has done in maybe a decade. Never did a podcast or anything of that nature. So what an absolute honor that was. And thank you very much to his team for making that happen as well. We can't thank them enough. Thank you very much to Francis Ngannou. Thank you very much to Rose Namajunas. So great to hear from her. Thank you very much to Nick Diaz. Thank you very much to Stipe Miocic. Thank you very much to Tyron Woodley. Thank you, as always, to Damian Mayan. Of course, thank you to Caitlin Chukagian as well. If you missed anything, check it out on our YouTube page, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, I say peace. I'm out.